Your microphones are live.
Good morning. Welcome to the June 3rd, 2008, Election Day 2008, Board of Supervisors meeting. Please rise and join me in the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, would you read the changes to the agenda, please?
Certainly. Changes to today's agenda under amended item on consent is A4, an introduction of an ordinance amending water service charges in the San Luis Obispo County Service Area Number 20, Santa Margarita Water System, 5th District. Recommend approval and instruct clerk to give notice of the hearing date set for July 22, 2008 at 9 a.m. Staff is recommending the cover sheet be amended to correct the county service area to read number 23. Added item on closed session under pending litigation, the conference with legal counsel is number 24, San Luis Obispo County Flood Control and Water Conservation District versus Munnick et al. 25, San Luis Obispo County Flood Control and Water Conservation District versus San Isabel Ranch Homeowners Association et al. Number 4, conference with real property negotiators is number 26, is the Pirates Cove Cave Landing APN 076-231-060-062-063-064-066, approximately 116 acres. The parties whom with the negotiating is Nick Tompkins, and the instructions to the negotiator will concern price, terms, and conditions. All requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirement. And those are the changes for today.
Thank you. With that, we'll move to the first item on the agenda, which is the consent agenda. I'll open it to public comment on items on consent, and I do have three requests to speak, the first being Herb Kendall, followed by Ethel Landers.
Good morning, members of the board and community. My name is Herb Kendall. I'm president of the Dana Adobe Nipomo Amigos, and I wish to speak regarding item 8 on the consent agenda. I support the authorization for $1.7 million in public facilities fees for the purchase of the 100 acres adjacent to the state historic landmark, the Rancho Adobe, the Rancho Nipomo Dana Adobe. I wanted to paraphrase a comment by Pandora Nash Carner at the recent Parks Commission meeting. She said that there are projects that come along before her that transcend one's own district or boundaries, and that this was one of those projects. She said that the benefits were so great that she felt this sense of excitement about the endorsement that was unanimous by the Parks Commission. Also, the South County Advisory Council unanimously supported this project. This project will permanently protect the public scenic, natural, and cultural resources, as well as provide passive outdoor recreation and educational opportunities. There are no maintenance costs to the county, as the Dana Adobe will manage and maintain the property. There is a committed investment by the Land Conservancy of San Luis Obispo County for almost $500,000 for the riparian restoration of the tributaries that run through the property. The project has greater benefits from a land use perspective. By creating a hard line to define Nipomo's urban reserve line and affording greater protection to surrounding agricultural lands. The area is filled with natural history resources, including unique geological deposits, two tributaries of Nipomo Creek, the Pacific Coast Flyway Migration Corridor, and important prehistoric cultural resources. Unique historical resources include the original El Camino Real, which runs through the property, evidence of the first non-mission adobe in the county, and some of the most historic agricultural lands in the county. Our proposed uses include educational field trips, volunteering opportunities, hiking and equestrian trails, and demonstration of historic agricultural activities. This property will also become part of a larger project that could become a linear park to Old Town, which is in the county parks master plan. And property ownership allows a greater opportunity for the county to do some visionary planning for the Oak Glen specific plan. Partnerships with the Land Conservancy and other vital community organizations and agencies will further leverage resource protections, educational and recreational values to the community. I would want to conclude with a statement from the, this was a second level investigation report by State Parks, and they did this in 2002. And the statement was, the potential educational and cultural benefits of preserving this tangible remnant of the state's history for future generations have been noted many times over the years by many people. But as the building ages and as surrounding rural land rapidly gives way to urban development, time is running out. For these reasons, I thank you for your support of this allocation to create an outdoor and educational and recreational legacy. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kandel. Ethel Landers, followed by Brian Dunn.
Dear Board, I'm here to thank you also on the same agenda item, A8. My name is Ethel Landers. I work for the Dana Adobe. I'm the administrative assistant there. I've only been there since March. Prior to that, I was a volunteer grant writer for them, and I saw the big vision. I saw how this special place in our county not only is going to touch everyone who works and volunteers there, but all of your children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and all the visitors who come to our wonderful county. And this is such a blessing to see all of us working as a unit for good for this area. So the reason I came today is to thank you. I've gotten to know Cacho personally through his extra work here, and I just so appreciate each and every one of your support. We have wonderful volunteers, we have wonderful staff, and our vision, not only for this 100 acres, but for the historical park that'll be developed adjacent to it, is fabulous. And I invite you anytime to come down, and we'll take you on a personal tour. But most of all, I came today to say thank you, and also welcome you, your family, and the public to come on over to the Dana Adobe and be part of this vision. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Landers. Brian Dunn, followed by Michael Wynn.
Good morning, Board Supervisors. I won't subject you to the same speech as a month ago, where I tried to point out the potential values of the Rancho Napomo and the Dana Adobe. Whether historical preservation, educational and research, recreation use, or tourist attraction, from every angle, it's a plus. Today, I just want to reaffirm that as adjacent ag property owners directly in the viewshed from the Adobe's front porch, my family supports the efforts to preserve this property as open space. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dunn. Michael Wynn.
Good morning. My name is Mike Wynn. I'm from Napomo. I also speak to item A8 in support of spending the money for this 100 acres. This is an ideal use for the land. And the proper orientation toward the home, if you want to think of it in terms of viewshed, is to come in from Thompson and then look down over that long vista down to the creek, and then there it lies ahead. There will be many things that will be need to be done to make that everything that we want it to be, can be. I will remind you, though, briefly, that we have many, many children in our area, and this will not be a recreational site in the sense that we usually think of it. It won't be a place that children can go to and play 7 days a week. And we still have a desperate need for such land. We need real parks for real kids. We need smart growth to actually work, not just talk about parks. And so I hope, even though we're giving a great deal of land of money here, and it will belong to you, that you will help us facilitate its use for children too. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wynn. That was my last request to speak from the public on the consent agenda, so I'll close public comment, bring it back to the board, and ask my colleagues if they would like to comment on any of the consent items. Supervisor Ovett?
Not at this time.
Supervisor Gibson?
A22, please.
Okay. Supervisor Sajjan?
Quick comment on A8, please. None, sir.
Supervisor Lindfall, thank you, and I have none this morning. Supervisor Sajjan, A8.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I take my time to thank the community of Napomo, the Advisory Council, the Park Commission, Mr. Jenny, especially for his efforts. Mr. Wayne, thank you for coming this morning. Brian, Ethel, appreciate your all of your efforts. But I have to publicly thank our unsung hero, Mr. Herb Kandel. This goes way beyond the call of duty for what he has done for the community and for the Dana Adobe, and the list goes on and on. So I want to personally thank you publicly. And also I want to extend my appreciation to Mr. Hill, Bob Hill, for his efforts as well. And thank my colleagues for their unanimous support. And if there are any future properties for strictly for park use, Mr. Wynn will be there. Obviously, Nipomo have generated enough money to be reinvested within the community. What I'm looking for this piece of property is the historical value as a priority. So that's all, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor Sajian. Supervisor Gibson, A22.
A22, I'll tag on with Supervisor Sajian and add my thanks to Herb and the Land Conservancy for the many years of work they've done down in Nipomo, and echo the comments of the Second District Parks Commissioner. There are projects that transcend the boundaries of our districts, and this is one shining example of it. It is an extraordinary place, and I hope the entire county and beyond can come and enjoy a piece of this state that seems to be transported from a wholly different time. It's a great project, and fully supportive of it.
Yeah. If I may, Mr. Chair, sure. Maybe all five of us go and help you burn the mortgage papers as soon as this is over.
Yeah. Good idea.
Thank you.
On A22, when I saw this, as I was reviewing the agenda, this is the submittal by the District Attorney, Sheriff, and Probation Department of a status report on the formation of the anti-gang and a request to apply for a grant that looks like it's headed toward forming a strategic plan to intervene, prevent, and enforce against gang violence. We have Chief Basti of the Sheriff's Department, Chief Barrett of the Probation. I wonder if either of you would like to speak very briefly on the activities of the Commission. From what I've been hearing, this is an extraordinary group of folks that have come together and over the fairly recent weeks and months have gotten quite a lot accomplished.
Yes, good morning. Thank you. Kim Barrett, Chief Probation Officer. The Commission has formed. We have met twice, May 1st and May 29th. We have a lot of folks that have come and are very interested, and it's been quite an education for those people who have come from the communities, particularly Paso Robles, Nipomo, Aurora Grande, on the gang issue, and we're looking forward to applying for this grant, OJJDP grant, up to $200,000 for 2 years. And what this grant will do is allow us to hire a coordinator to look at all of the services in the county, from early intervention, prevention, and suppression, and really coordinate all of those services. Right now, we have a lot of nonprofit organizations that are doing a lot of things for youth and children, but we need to coordinate those services. So that is the grant, and that grant is due June 13th. All three agencies are working, and we will get that grant in with your approval to apply for it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chief Barrett.
Morning, Mr. Chairman, Board of Supervisors, Staff, Chief Deputy Basti, Sheriff's Department. In addition, let me just say that the importance of this grant and the funding, you know, we came to you in February and we asked about increasing personnel, et cetera, and the three primary lead law enforcement, District Attorney, Sheriff, and Probation working towards getting a coordinated effort. This coordination will focus on existing services and blend those existing services threefold in intervention, prevention, as well as enforcement. So we wanted to let you know that we are seeking outside funding to make the gang task force and keep our county safe. So thank you.
Thank you, Chief Basti. Supervisor Gibson?
I appreciate the efforts of all our staff and the community. I think that kind of coordinated effort, even in without a coordinator yet, is really great.
Yes, I did have the opportunity, along with my legislative assistant Amy Gilman, to attend the last commission's meeting on May 29th, and it is quite an eclectic group of people working very hard and focusing on this effort to head off any further development of gang activities in the county. It's a coordinated effort. I'm pleased that they've all come together and worked so hard to get this grant application completed on very short notice, and we'll actually have a letter of support on our board agenda next week to support that application. So we're working hard to get that done and get that in, and I want to thank the efforts of the three primary law enforcement agencies, but all the other related entities that are involved in this. So
Chair, I'll move approval of the consent agenda item.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second to approve the consent agenda. Roll call, please.
And that's as amended?
Yes.
Mr. Asajian?
Aye.
Mr. Lindvall?
Aye.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes. Thank you. Before we move on to the presentation calendar, we do have a special guest with us this morning, and I'm going to ask Chief Jenkins to come forward and introduce a guest that's in the audience this morning and comment on her efforts on our behalf. Chief?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and Board. Matt Jenkins, Chief Cal Fire County Fire. And I just wanted to introduce you today to Candace Gregory, who is the Southern Region Chief for Cal Fire. Cal Fire is broken into two regions, the north half of the state and the south half of the state. And Candace Gregory is the chief for the southern half of the state for Cal Fire. And I'll let her say good morning to you.
Well, good morning, and thank you for the introduction. And I came over to San Luis Obispo to just make sure that Cal Fire is serving the residents of the county in the way that you expect us to do. We're always looking at ways to do things better, and wanted you to know who I am, just in case you this guy right here isn't working out for you or doing quite as well. I also want to thank you for all of your support to the fire department here and over the years, and it's a pleasure to be over here from lovely Fresno.
Well, welcome, Supervisor Sajian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, when I first said you were in town, welcome, and I thought maybe you were here to check on a story you might have heard about our chief's horse last weekend, but he'll tell you later.
Supervisor Gibson?
Old light, welcome.
Oh. Yours is a new light?
New light. Chief, I just want to say, if you're here to check up on him, his report card is an A+, because Matt, since he's taken the reins over here, has done a great job for us, and we appreciate all the good things he does, and also what Cal Fire does. Because we have a great relationship with Cal Fire, formerly CDF, for a lot of years.
Thank you.
We're quite pleased with the service that Cal Fire provides the county, and thank you for checking up. But certainly, they're quite capable men and women of the service, and we appreciate their fine service here. So, welcome and thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. With that, we'll move on to the presentation calendar. We do have
presentation calendar.
Second. Things move fast here. We have a motion and a second to approve the presentation calendar. Roll call, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Ovid.
Aye.
Mr. Asajian.
Aye.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr.
Lindvall. Aye.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes. We have four presentations this morning. The first being read by Supervisor Asajian, proclaiming June 10, 2008, as Hunger Awareness Day. Supervisor Asajian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At this time, I would like to invite Mr. Carl Hansen to come to the podium, if you will, please, and allow me to read this resolution. This is a resolution proclaiming June 10, 2008, as Hunger Awareness Day in San Luis Obispo County. The following resolution is hereby offered and read. Whereas the Food Bank Coalition of San Luis Obispo County is a countywide organization dedicated to eliminating hunger. And whereas the Food Bank assists 156 local organizations by providing food at pennies on the dollar cost. And whereas the Food Bank last year helped feed 30,000 San Luis Obispo County residents. And whereas the Food Bank is coordinating a countywide event to promote Hunger Awareness Day on June 10th. And whereas people giving $1 on one day, June 10, 2008,
can raise the funds needed to help eliminate local hunger. And whereas, since Hunger Awareness Day in 2007, the food bank has distributed over 3.5 million pounds of food to hungry people in San Luis Obispo County. Now, therefore, be it resolved that Board of Supervisors does hereby proclaim June 10, 2008, as Hunger Awareness Day and supports this effort to eliminate local hunger in the county of San Luis Obispo by presenting this resolution and giving a dollar to go with it.
Okay. I'm prepared.
We'll line up for you if you want to take a picture. Okay, collect your dollars and I'll give you the resolution.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Come on over.
If you want to, if we can pose and, or if you want to hold okay. that up.
Is Amy down here?
No, I don't think Amy's here.
Okay.
We got a camera.
Thank you, Carl.
Thank you. If you want to say
a few words, you're welcome. Yeah. Do you want to take this before politicians take it away?
Yes, right.
You can let it run through, Carl. Do you want some ushers to run it through the area?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Yeah. They want to give you a dollar. Just pass it around. Just give it to the first person.
Well, I tell you, as the retired minister, I feel right at home here.
Mr. Knowles agreed to be your usher. Mr. Knowles agreed to be your usher. He'll make sure it goes up and down the aisle over here. He's got a lot of experience with that.
Well, thank you very much, Cacho, Chairman Patterson, and board and staff. It's a great honor to us to have you all be the first to put the $1 one day effort into effect. Next Tuesday is Hunger Awareness Day throughout the county. Thanks to you giving us this proclamation. And we will have these boxes scattered around the county, and we'll have collection sites at various places around the county. And I appreciate this opportunity to tell the public about it and to invite their participation in our efforts to alleviate and really truly in one sense eliminate hunger in our county, because there is no excuse for anyone to go hungry in our county thanks to the resources that we have and the many, many agencies that the coalition serves with low-cost or free food. Our priorities are not only to combat hunger, but to combat poor health. And the quality of the food that we are distributing is increasingly more healthy. All the fruits and vegetables that we bring in from around the state of California and are increasingly developing local resources for are given out free to the agencies, and of course all of the food and produce and all the food that we distribute is completely free, whether it's directly from us or from the agencies that we serve to those who are in need. So this is an important day for us. The theory is that if everybody in the county gave $1 on that one day, that we would have enough money to solve the acquisition problems for this food for a whole year. So I don't know if we'll make that goal this year. That would be, what, about $260,000, something like that. But it would be a wonderful day when that comes, of course, and I think it will, because last year was the first time we had Hunger Awareness Day. So this is the second anniversary, and your support is much appreciated.
Carl, thank you. And if I may, I just want to mention a couple of things just to show you how effective the food bank is and how involved they are in accomplishing their mission in the county. Carl served on a task force that this board created a couple of years ago, the Childhood Obesity Prevention Task Force, and they've made an effort now to include a greater variety of foods through their program. Carl mentioned improving the nutritional quality of their foods, and they are doing that, and he was an active participant in that task force, and we appreciate that. And also during budget time, the senior nutrition program came before the board requesting money to help fund their program, and Carl and the food bank worked with the senior nutrition program to, again, help them meet their goals. And so what the food bank does, as Carl said, is they help all of these other nonprofits countywide meet their objective of feeding the hungry in San Luis Obispo County. So, Carl, we appreciate your expanded involvement in doing your mission. So,
thank you.
Supervisor Sajjan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you need locations in the South County, let me know. I can offer a couple.
Okay, good. Thank you. Great.
Did you want to advertise for that?
No.
Okay. Well, we'll have 13 locations around the county, all volunteers, of course, staffing them. Some of them are completely staffed by an agency. And half of the money that's collected at those sites will go toward that agency's credit at the food bank. So we have a wonderful spirit of cooperation and working together collaboratively in order to be more efficient and more effective in helping hungry people. So thank you very much for this honor. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Our next resolution will be read by Supervisor Gibson. It's recognizing the 10th anniversary of the San Luis Obispo County Community Foundation. Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could have Barry Vanderkellen and John Dunn approach a lectern or lecterns. My pleasure to have the following resolution offered and read. Whereas, founded May 9, 1998, the San Luis Obispo County Community Foundation determined a mission to strengthen local nonprofits, help residents, support their neighbors, and establish enduring aid through the creation of county-focused endowments. And whereas, the foundation has led countywide efforts to strengthen arts organizations, to combat childhood obesity, to promote social justice, help students afford college, increase literacy, protect the natural environment, and help make the healthcare system more accessible for all residents. And whereas the Community Foundation has awarded $500,000 in scholarships to high school and college students, enabling them to pursue educational goals. And whereas the county has partnered with the Community Foundation by investing $1 million from Proposition 10 tobacco tax money to help health-related programs. And whereas the Community
Foundation, it's whereas I finally get my microphone light on.
Project.
Things we're doing, I thought I was projecting pretty well. Finally, whereas the Community Foundation is a local organization and is seen as a trusted partner in helping people achieve their philanthropic goals, and for 10 years has helped San Luis Obispo County residents turn their altruistic passion into community action. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors does hereby recognize the 10th anniversary of the San Luis Obispo County Community Foundation and applauds the Foundation's commitment and excellence in carrying out its mission for the good of San Luis Obispo County. And, gentlemen,
Mr. Dunn.
Yes, thank you. Chairman Patterson, members of the board, I realize that the majority of you are waiting for the polls to close this evening. Therefore, thank you very much for taking the time to issue this very thoughtful proclamation commemorating the first 10 years of the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County. We are very grateful for our success during these first 10 years, but we have to acknowledge that it is really the community's success in giving so generously so that others can attain a better life. We are grateful for our founders, those people who had the faith and the foresight to get us started on a solid course. We are especially grateful to our donors over the years, for without their generosity, there would be less capability to help others. Last year, through their caring and through our work, we were able to give grants totaling $2.5 million to nonprofit agencies and to individuals within our county. We are especially grateful to you, the Board of Supervisors, for your help and support and the faith that you have placed in us. Perhaps most of all, we are grateful for the caring and the giving and the helping spirit manifested by the people of this county, citizens who realize that all of us prosper best when we recognize and attend to the needs of our neighbors. We are grateful to past boards and to our present board and to our excellent staff under the direction of Barry Vanderkellen. It has been a great 10 years. Thank you, and try to have a relaxing day. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Dunn. Supervisor Linthal.
I was just going to say, John, before you sit down, I also want to thank you. I know Barry might be the guy at the helm, but you do an awful lot of heavy lifting for that organization, so I appreciate all the work that you do.
Okay, great. Thank you. With that, we'll move on to our next presentation, commending Diana Curtis upon her retirement after 31 years. And Supervisor Linthal, you'll read that resolution, please.
Mr. Dunn, I want to step forward, and Mr. Seebach, you also want to take the opposing podium or lectern? This resolution is commending Diana Curtis for 31 years of service to the County of San Luis Obispo. Whereas Diana Curtis began her San Luis Obispo County career on June 8, 1977, as an accountant clerk with the Department of Social Services, earning several promotions over the years, and transferred to the Auditor's Controller's Office in December of 85 as an accounting technician confidential. And whereas Diana served the past 22 years in the Auditor's Payroll Division, capably handling enrollments and modifications to employee health, dental, vision, insurance plans, as well as a collection of insurance premiums. Whereas Diana also served as a role model and backup person whenever needed for all members of the payroll staff, including her division supervisor. And whereas Ms. Curtis will finally have time in retirement to devote to her reading, genealogical research, grandchildren, and perhaps most importantly, chocolate tasting. Now, therefore, be it resolved and ordered by the Board of Supervisors that Diana Curtis is hereby commended and thanked for her long and meritorious service to the County of San Luis Obispo and its citizens, and is wished the best of health and happiness in the coming years. I don't know anybody who ever got a paycheck is probably really thankful for you, too. With that, Diana, you want to come forward and get your resolution, please? Diana, you're expected to say a few words, because if you don't, I think some of your fan club in the back is probably going to come up and roast you or toast you before Mr. Seebach does.
I'll let Jerry go first.
Always deference, that's Diana. Well, you said it all in the resolution, except that personally and on behalf of all of our staff, we are sad to be losing Diana Curtis. She's just such a gentle lady and such a stalwart in our office from so many years. But we are also happy that she's moving on to another exciting time in her life. She and Don are going to have a lot of fun, I know that. So, Diana, thanks for everything.
Thank you so much. My working years have been a wild ride, lots of ups and downs and curves, but plenty of straight road, too. I'm hoping my retirement years will all just be smooth sailing. That's my hope. So thank you very much.
And we'd like to take this opportunity to recognize another individual who's dedicated their professional life to working for the county. Supervisor Ovett will read a resolution commending Santos Arona upon his retirement after 33 years of service to the county. Supervisor Ovett and Santos, we saw you come in, so.
Oh, you did come in? I saw him standing back there like he wanted to avoid this. You know how many years it was that I was here before I realized that Santos wasn't his last name? Hi. Are you ready?
About
30 minutes ago? Right.
30 minutes ago, it kind of hit home.
Maybe we should just warn Santos that this isn't closed session, so you know what you say now is going to go out of the airway.
It will be recorded, yes. Let me read this resolution, and then we will let those who wish to express their gratitude or whatever have their opportunity. With this, it's a resolution committing Santos Arona, Jr., for his 33 years of service to San Luis Obispo County. He basically came to the county on March 28, 1975 as a personnel analyst one. And of course, being as talented as he was, he moved up to the ranks promoting to the personnel analyst two about a year later, and then analyst three about 2 years after that. And then on 1983, Santos was appointed as principal personnel analyst. Santos has served as the county affirmative action coordinator since 1990. His responsibilities in the county's labor relations program have provided him with fond memories and a few that weren't so fond. Now, this is what's written. So. And this one I have, I think, is the best one, because Santos is proud of the fact that he participated in years of negotiation with the Deputy Sheriff's Association and was never accidentally run over by a law enforcement vehicle. And Rod is squirming back there. He was there. Whereas the corporate and institutional knowledge that Santos brings to the table has proven invaluable throughout the years, we therefore resolve as the Board of Supervisors, County of San Luis Obispo, State of California, that Santos Arona is hereby commended for his 33 years of dedicated service. And be it further resolved that we wish you the best in your retirement and are concerned about the fact that you may spend most of your money at your favorite place in San Ynez. We will not mention that. Mr. Ronas, congratulations.
Gail want to come
and
make him look
good.
And David.
For sure. Yeah, my son come in here. We could get John and John back.
You know, while he's going back, they didn't put it in a resolution, and I think that one more commendable thing is the years he spent on the EOC board and a lot of the work he's done with the Latino community. And then we get into the fun stuff that, you know, how many years of barbecuing chicken and whatever we used to do those years. And of course, the beverage on the side that he always brought.
Okay. None of that light stuff, huh?
No.
Okay. David Edge.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. David Edge, County Administrator and Santos's boss for the last few years. When I came to the county a decade ago, Santos was already a fixture. And Supervisor Ovett just touched upon some of the essence of what Santos is about. You talk about dedication, you talk about service, you're talking about Santos Arona. I'll talk a little bit about the county work, but you can't not talk about his service with EOC, and I know a number of you are very aware of it. He's been with them for years, and he has been a mentor to Latino young males in particular. He was able to talk with them and mentor them very effectively over the years, and I think that's a tremendous service that has nothing to do with his work for the county, but is an important contribution and is an important definer of what Santos is about. I was talking a couple of weeks ago with some of my people and explaining Proposition 13 and the fallout of Proposition 13 in the 70s, and these were people, they weren't actually born when Proposition 13 happened. And it occurred to me Santas was already out and operating and dealing as a personnel with the ramifications of Prop 13 for our employees at that time. And that's kind of indicative of where we're at. You know, when it's ancient history to some of our people, that's a sign of the times, isn't it, Santas? He's been the county historian in our business. We have a personnel issue. We go to Santas, well, you know, what was the genesis of this? And for most of what we deal with, Santas was there for that genesis and is able to explain it to us. He has been through numerous changes, some very significant, moving with labor relations from personnel to the admin office. Santas made the change. He's a gentleman, never complains, simply does the job, is dedicated to doing the job. And as some of you know, he's struggled without complaint with some health issues over the past few years. And it's been a challenging time for him, but he's kept coming into the office and doing the work that is required of him. And we're grateful for that. And we're happy for him at this stage that he's able to take the time and enjoy a well-deserved retirement, take a break, work on that health, and make sure he gets to enjoy those indulgences for years to come. With his wife, Karen, we appreciate Santas' service, and we wish him and Karen well in retirement. Santas, thanks so much, man.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dave.
Well, it doesn't before you, Santas, eagerly
Ms. Wilcox?
Gail Wilcox from the administrative office. I echo everything David just said, and Santas, as David indicated, has been in the hospital several times. He's been struggling for the last year, and I can't tell you how many times I would get emails from him at midnight or 2 o'clock in the morning saying, hey, don't forget about this and you need to do that. And just another sign of his dedication to the work that he does. He has great stories, and if you haven't heard the story of when he was in New Orleans during Katrina, you definitely should hear those stories. They're very interesting, and I want to lay to rest the rumor that he did not purposely get stranded in New Orleans to avoid negotiations with the DSA. That's simply not true. Personally, I want to thank you for all your support in the last 6 years, and on behalf of the staff in our office, you've been great to work with. We really appreciate you and sincerely wish you the best in your retirement, and I hope it's a very long one.
Thank you. I get a piece of paper here, but not very much on it, so I'm not going to take very much time. First of all, I want to thank the board and former boards for their support. I've had it's been a great pleasure working for the boards, being able to advise them. I think that the board has a number of tough decisions that it has to make, will be making, and you have the staff available to you that's going to help you make those tough decisions. I also want to thank the employees, my fellow employees, who helped me along the way, people who have before me have retired, people who currently work in the administrative office, my friends in the auditor's office, human resources, and very important, facility maintenance custodial. I value their conversations at all times. It's good to bounce ideas off of them. Lastly, I value my working relationship with the unions. I've worked quite hard to maintain those, and I believe that the county has benefited from those efforts. So with that, I thank you, and bid adieu.
Okay. Don't go away. Supervisor Lenthal has a comment.
Santos, I mean, everything's already been said about what you've done for the county, but I want to underscore again the things that you've done for the community, whether it's mentoring a Latino group, whether it's putting a chicken barbecue on for somebody. Santos is always the one that was there when somebody needed a helping hand. So not only thank you for all you do, Santos, but probably most importantly, thank you for your friendship the last 30-something years. I really appreciate it.
And I'd like to comment. I've had the pleasure the past 3.5 years to be the board's representative to the Economic Opportunity Commission and to work with Santos, who was for many years the chair of that organization, and he takes his own time to travel all over the country to represent EOC and San Luis Obispo County, and he plays a very active role in developing programs that really materialize nationwide, programs that spawn here in San Luis Obispo County at EOC, soon to become the Community Action Partnership. And I had the pleasure also of not going to New Orleans. Santos and his wife left a couple of days early to spend some time in New Orleans, and Hurricane Katrina hit the weekend that we were going to convene the Community Action Partnership National Convention in New Orleans, and of course Santos and his wife were stranded there. The rest of us, they'd canceled all flights into New Orleans, so we didn't get there. But a year later, we went to Orlando, Florida, and it was really good to see San Luis Obispo so well represented nationally at the Community Action Partnership, and Santos plays a very key role in that on his own time, doing good for the community and for the state and the nation. The Aronas haven't left the county. His wife still works here at the county, and his son is now working for the probation department, I understand. So they've started a tradition here in San Luis Obispo County. And Santos, I want to personally thank you for all the work that you do for all of us and wish you well in your retirement. Supervisor Asagian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also want to thank Santos for your commitment to the betterment of this organization. Appreciate your friendship. Learned a lot from you. Hearing what Mr. Edge has to say about you being a historian, it means to me that you're as classical as what Supervisor Ovid is for this Board of Supervisors. So thank you. Best wishes.
Thank you. I'll be around.
Yeah, I know.
It seems like everybody has honeydews for me to do. So, I mean, the clerk recorder asked me to volunteer as one of the first ones. And I understand the probation chief wants me to volunteer for something. And then my wife does have her list also.
Remember your priority list.
Yeah, which is the priority, Santos.
Yeah.
Santos, thank you. That concludes our presentations this morning, so I will give people a few minutes to clear the chambers, and then we'll move on to public comment. Let's move on to public comment for items that are not on the day's agenda. We have a number of people that would like to speak during public comment, the first being Eric Greening, followed by Susan Hughes.
Thank you. I'm Eric Greening, and I guess I'll start by showing off this sticker. It says, "I voted, have you." And these look like cheap little trinkets, but they actually represent a very heavy cost and a very, very valuable price. Our predecessors actually had to have a revolution to establish the people's sovereignty, and it is certainly our responsibility and our privilege to keep it. So I hope everyone takes the time Today is election day, and there are some important issues. You may be in a supervisor's district that's up. Even if not, there are some very important issues on the state ballot. And the other thing I wanted to talk about, speaking of the state and relative to the governor's May revise, tomorrow you will be part of the Regional Transit Authority Board that looks at a difficult situation that results from perhaps hoping that public transit could be operated on the cheap. We had a previous contractor who left us in a world of hurt through deferred and avoided maintenance on the fleet. And so you're going to be making a decision about a contract where the original proposal was 2.9 something million, and because of the deferred maintenance, you're now over 4 million, and you'll probably swallow hard and approve it because it is unconscionable not to keep the buses moving. But this is a difficult time for transit. TDA is down to the extent that sales tax collections are down, and we are getting a real whammy in the governor's May revise. SLOCOG staff estimated that in January, in fact, we were told that we would get 3 million in state transit assistance in the January proposal. The May proposal is better for schools and state parks, but it sacrifices public transit. It reduced the proposed funding to 1.3 million. That's only one of many serious hits we're getting from this May revise. We cannot retreat from the obligation to provide ever better public transit, because the cost of actually continuing to have vehicle miles traveled and expand the road system to avoid congestion is much, much higher than the cost to run a decent transit system where we maintain the fleet, pay the employees decently, and so on. I would urge you to have a study session on the May revise at the earliest possible opportunity, look at implications for this, health care, et cetera, and as the county, take a strong position relative to what needs to be done. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening, and I will follow up your comment with the comment that that's precisely what we intend to do during budget hearings, is have a discussion about the implications of the May revise as well as the ledge analyst budget. So we will have that expanded conversation with our department heads. Susan Hughes, first five, followed by Catherine Rossi.
Good morning, Chairperson Patterson and members of the board. My name is Susan Hughes. I'm Executive Director for First Five San Luis Obispo County. 2 weeks ago, I attended the 9th annual First Five Statewide Conference, and I was surprised to see that an economist was the keynote speaker on the first day. That economist was Art Rolnick, Senior Vice President and Director of Research for the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis. The title of his speech was Investing in Early Childhood Development and Economic Analysis to Guide Public Policy. His message was that results consistently show that high-quality early childhood programs help kids enter kindergarten with the skills they need to learn, and that those children continue to be successful in school and ultimately become contributing members of society. Our vision at First Five SLO County reflects that same message. Children in every community of San Luis Obispo County will thrive in supportive, nurturing environments, enter school healthy and ready to learn, develop resilience, and become productive, well-adjusted members of society. That local vision was created in 1999. We were definitely ahead of Mr. Rolnick. Last year alone, First Five programs throughout the state provided 428,000 people with health insurance, enrollment assistance, and other health access services. 165,000 received oral health services, more than 53,000 received mental health services, and 235,000 were connected with services designed to help families meet their basic needs. Locally, from 2001 to 2007, First Five SLO County has provided parent education programs, in-home treatment, and resources and referrals to approximately 4,800 children with special needs. We've provided vision screening to approximately 35,000 children ages 3 to 5. 83% of those children who required follow-up treatment received it. We provided breastfeeding education and support to approximately 7,500 women utilizing individual peer counseling, group classes, and satellite clinics. 51% of those women were still breastfeeding at 6 months. Those are just a few examples of local accomplishments over the last few years. Since 2001, approximately $15 million has been invested locally in programs that improve children's health, improve family functioning, improve early care and education, and improve systems of care. Also, we partnered with your board to develop Martha's Place and the San Luis Obispo County Children's Health Initiative. With all of the state budget challenges, there are some state legislators who would like to dismantle local commissions and refocus First $5 in other areas. I trust that you'll agree First Five Slo County programs during the first 10 years have made a real difference in the lives of our county's youngest residents. I look forward to at least 10 more years of productive investment, accomplishments, and partnership with you and others to make the next decade even better for children ages 0 to 5. In fact, investing in early intervention and prevention may just make the anti-gang task forces a thing of the past. So thanks for your time, and I have some handouts for you that give you a little more facts on what we've been doing in the last several years.
Thank you, Ms. Hughes. Catherine Rossi, followed by Julie Rodewald.
Good morning. My name is Catherine Rossi, and I live in Los Osos. I came before you about a year ago, sleep-deprived from an issue that I'm going to bring up today, but I'm not sleep-deprived, so I'm much more cheerful. The Dalai Lama, in his teachings of compassion, often uses common sense in the same sentence. And generally speaking, it is true, compassion begets common sense, and common sense is compassionate. In the next few months, you'll probably be asked to review vacation rental regulations to be applied to the cities in the coastal zones of San Luis Obispo County, which includes Avila, Los Osos, Morro Bay, Pismo Beach, Oceano. I urge you to exercise compassion and common sense and approve the new wording of the ordinances that currently only applies to Cambria and Cayucas. Why do I ask you to be compassionate and to use common sense? My neighbor has an unrestricted vacation rental license. On record with the Department of Planning, his house has 4 bedrooms and 2 bathrooms and a powder room. In other words, there's 3 toilets. He can and does advertise his house as 7 bedrooms for 21 people. Most weekends there are 21 and sometimes more people renting this house. Cars are parked all over the place. You can only imagine the noise impact of this many people under one roof in a very quiet single-family residential neighborhood. I refer to it as an unlicensed hotel. I cannot imagine that any government agency would condone this situation. If the rules that govern Cambria and Cayucas were to apply to this house, the maximum number of people that would be allowed would be 10, according to the planning department. Because there are not regulations in place, I personally have no voice or no rights to exercise change with the degradation of my lifestyle. All the agencies I've spoken to encourage written regulations so they have something to enforce. I've spoken at length to the California Water Quality Board, as our homes are on septic tanks that are not rated for so many people. I met with the code enforcement officers to determine if there's any regulations to be able to limit the people. I spent 30 minutes with our sheriff's commander determining what constitutes reasonable noise complaints so that I could be a good citizen and not complain if it wasn't my place. What I learned is just as there is an expectation of how much noise a pile driver makes in a construction zone in a residential neighborhood, there is an expectation of how much noise 21 adults would make. Noise complaints are only enforceable if there is an excess over and above expectations. In essence, 21 people consist of a rather large party, and their noise is therefore expected. I've written to each and every one of you once or twice. The Department of Planning has currently sent an inquiry to the Coastal Commission about including all of the coastal cities to include all vacation rentals into one set of regulations. And so far, the regulations are, in fact, according to the Planning Department, working pretty well in Cambria and Cayucas. So it seems that everybody agrees there's a problem, and everybody agrees this problem is likely to get worse with the housing crisis, especially with second homes and foreclosures. Without restrictions on vacation rentals that can create an environment of fitting into a neighborhood rather than blatantly standing out, our quiet, well-cared-for neighborhoods could be history. My lifestyle is severely compromised by what is happening next door to me. The value of my home has decreased, and my lifestyle is compromised. I ask you to remember me.
If you could wrap it up, please. Your time's up.
All right. I ask you to remember me, please, when this issue comes up. I ask you to act compassionately towards me.
Thank you.
And the other residents.
Thank you. Julie Rodewald, followed by Patrick McGibney.
Good morning. Julie Rodewald, County Clerk Recorder. Obviously, you probably know I'm here to speak about Election Day today, but I did want to make a comment about the two presentations that were given out earlier. I've worked with both of those people my entire career here. In fact, Diana Curtis was one of my first supervisors at the Department of Social Services, and it's a testament to the true commitment of county employees. Those two are certainly a testament to that. And it's one of those emotional days as we watch our counterparts retire, and we longingly look forward to the same thing in our own lives. But on to Election Day. Polls have been open for a little over 2.5 hours. They're going to be open for another 10.5 hours, so there's plenty of time for people to get to their polling place and vote. If they're holding a vote by mail ballot, it has to be turned in by 8 o'clock tonight to any polling place in our county or into one of our offices. We do have our famous vote by mail drop-off in front, staffed by two of our poll workers that are there accepting ballots so that people don't have to find parking at the downtown government center. Where we will have results posted to our website after 8 o'clock tonight, so anyone who's interested in seeing the results can go to the county homepage. There's a big flag, Decision 2008. Can't miss it. We will be posting results there after the polls close at 8 o'clock, and we'll continue posting until we're done, which will hopefully be about 11:30 tonight. So hopefully...
Would you give the address for the website?
Yeah. It's www.slocounty.ca.gov. Like I say, you can't miss the flag on the front page. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rodewald. Patrick McGibney.
My name is Patrick McGibney. I'm a resident of Carrizo Plains. I'd like to just make a public comment. Today is Election Day. Partisan politics has played quite a big role on the board, especially this year, but I would like to thank Mr. Patterson, who is our chairperson at this time, for being so articulate in his speech, so sensitive and thoughtful for all the residents that come up and speak before this board, and I'd like to just wish you the very best of luck. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McGibney. That was my last request to speak this morning. What I would like to do at this point is call for a short break. We'll reconvene at 9:45.
Microphones are live.
I'm going to strap you down.
Microphones are live.
Welcome back.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, before you start, can I just publicly want to thank and wish Mr. Cacho a happy birthday today, since we just had a little celebration on our break. I don't think you want us to sing happy birthday to you, but I think everybody needs to know it's your birthday.
Thank you. We want it to be a, you know, continuing pleasant occasion, so we'll forego the singing here.
I'll save it for tonight.
Happy birthday, Supervisor Sajjan. I believe he's not the youngest, but almost the youngest member of the board. Only a few months difference between Supervisor Sajjan and Supervisor Gibson. With that, we'll move on to item C1. Madam Clerk, would you introduce item C1, please?
Item C1.
Certainly. Item C1 is a hearing to consider, one, a request by JH Land Partnership Busick for approval of vesting tentative tract map 1789 to subdivide an existing 47.54 acre parcel into 16 lots of 2.0 to 5.29 acre in size for the purpose of sale and or development, located at the northwest terminus of Coast View Drive, south of Aurora Grande in the residential suburban land use category, and two, the certification of the final environmental impact report, 4th District. This item was continued from March 4th, 2008. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign.
Very good. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'm John Nall. I'm your principal environmental specialist with the Department of Planning and Building. The presentation on this item this morning is going to be provided by Ms. Shauna Scott. I think all of you know her. She's a local consultant that we use on a fairly regular basis. She's working as an extension of staff on this project. Also in the audience, we have Rick Swan, because we might be talking about a Cal Fire issue. We don't know yet. And then, of course, we have our own Miss Cammie Griffin and Glenn Marshall, just in case we get in a jam on this project. I'm going to pass out, we do have a revised condition number 48. Sean is going to talk about that during her presentation. I'll make sure that gets going around to you so you can look at that during the presentation. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll go ahead and turn it over to Shauna. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nall. Ms. Scott?
Good morning, Chairman Patterson and Board Supervisors. Shauna Scott Morrow Group, a division of SWCA, on behalf of the County Planning and Building Department. I'll be providing the staff presentation of tentative tract map 1789 and certification of the final environmental impact report. The project site is a 47.54 acre parcel located at the northwestern terminus of Coast View Drive, immediately south of the city of Arroyo Grande and adjacent to Highway 101. The project site is within the residential suburban land use category within the San Luis Bay inland planning area. The applicant is proposing to subdivide the parcel into 16 lots, 2 to 5.29 acres in size for the purpose of sale or development. The objective of the project is to subdivide the site for residential development at a density consistent with the county general plan and land use ordinance. This slide shows the applicant's proposed subdivision. Additional components of the project include, as shown in red, a building control line on proposed lots 1 through 8, and establishment of an 18.7-acre open space easement over the northern portion of the project site. The intent of the open space easement is to protect visual resources as seen from Highway 101. The easement would also protect oak woodland and a portion of grassland habitat on the site. There is an existing graded emergency access road through the project site, which connects the Vista Del Mar subdivision within the city of Arroyo Grande with the Falcon Ridge Estates subdivision to the southeast of the project site. Primary access would be provided by Castillo Del Mar Drive, which would be extended onto the project site as shown in red. Secondary access would be provided by Coast View Drive, which is the road section between the proposed terminus of Castillo Del Mar Drive and the terminus of Coast View Drive would be unpaved, the area shown in blue. The applicant proposes to install gates to control access into the development. An internal road would provide access to lots 12, 13, and 14. A 210,000-gallon water tank and access road is proposed between lots 5 and 6. A 1.82-acre-foot stormwater basin is proposed in the southern portion of the project site. And that's the water tank site. Tract improvements would result in the disturbance of approximately 1.6 acres. Each lot would be sold and developed by individual landowners, likely resulting in additional disturbance of 13 to 26 acres. As shown in this aerial, surrounding land uses include Highway 101 to the northeast, the Vista Del Mar residential subdivision to the west, the Sunrise Terrace Mobile Home Park to the southwest, and Falcon Ridge Estates to the southeast. The following slide shows a series of photos of the project site. This is a view to the southeast from Castillo Del Mar Drive looking onto the property. This is a view northwest across the site towards Vista Del Mar within the city of Arroyo Grande. This is a view southwest across the site to Vista Del Mar. This is a view west across the site towards the city of Arroyo Grande. This is a view southwest across the site to the Sunrise Mobile Home Park. This is a view south across the site and the existing drainage swale on site. This is a view southwest showing the drainage swale and the Sunrise Mobile Home Park. This is a view southeast showing the site boundary and Falcon Ridge Estates. This is a view to the northeast and Falcon Ridge Estates. This is a view to the east showing the existing gate at Coastview Drive at Falcon Ridge Estates. This project site has this proposed project has an extended timeline due to a series of events that have occurred since 1990. In 1990, a negative declaration was issued, and a request for review and appeal of the negative declaration was filed by the City of Arroyo Grande. The city withdrew its appeal, and in December 1993, the project was approved by the County Planning Commission. In December 1993, an appeal was filed by the Falcon Ridge Homeowners Association, citing issues related to the lack of mapped access on the track map, traffic, and drainage issues. In April 1994, the County Board of Supervisors required preparation of an environmental impact report. In September 1996, the EIR was initiated. At the time, the applicant was proposing on-site septic and leach field for wastewater disposal, and Class 1 impacts were identified due to site conditions on the site that would not allow the on-site disposal of septic. In April 2001, the applicant obtained an agreement for wastewater collection and disposal from the San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. In February 2002, the applicant submitted revised plans to the county and the preparation of the EIR was reinitiated. In January 2004, the draft EIR was circulated for public review. Based on a response from the City of Arroyo Grande, they noted a new significant adverse traffic impact to the intersection of Highway 101 and El Campo Road. At the time the EIR was published, the city had been accepting fees from applicants to go towards improvements at that intersection. When the EIR was circulated, the city was no longer accepting fees for future improvements due to lack of funding. In March 2005, a revised draft EIR was circulated. A response from CAL FIRE noted a new significant adverse fire safety impact due to the lack of secondary access to the project site. In May 2006, an MOU was completed and signed by the City of Arroyo Grande, the CMR School District, John Taylor, and the project applicants, which allowed access at the city limits. The MOU required road connection between Castillo del Mar and Valley Road. As part of the MOU, the applicant provided funds to acquire prime agricultural land and deed the land to the city for construction of the road. The applicant paid in lieu mitigation fees for the loss of prime agricultural land and also submitted funds to develop for the city to develop plans for the roadway. As part of that decision, the city adopted an MND which included an analysis of that proposed roadway. The analysis was incorporated into the final EIR. In August 2006, revised plans were provided by the applicant showing primary access via Castillo del Mar through the City of Arroyo Grande and secondary access via Coastview Drive in Falcon Ridge Estates within the County of San Luis Obispo. As part of the proposal, the applicant included a gate with access restrictions that would allow ingress to the project site from the city and would allow free flow egress out of the project site. The applicant proposed a Knox box on the Falcon Ridge Estates side to prohibit ingress from Falcon Ridge Estates and also proposed to include signage and to include a non-paved section between the terminus of the road and the gate to discourage persons from using that as normal access, non-emergency access, but to also meet CAL FIRE's requirements for secondary access. In October 2007, the final EIR was complete, which included additional sections including fire safety and agricultural resources, incorporating the city's analysis of the loss of ag land within the city. the significant adverse traffic impact at Highway 1 El Campo was avoided, and no new significant adverse impacts were identified in the final EIR. At the December 11, 2007 hearing, the Board of Supervisors hearing was continued to March 4th. At a request of the applicant, the hearing was continued to today, June 3rd, 2008. In May 2008, the applicant obtained an updated MOU, which required re-signage due to the time lapse. And also in May 2008, the applicant obtained an easement from Falcon Ridge Homeowners Association, allowing secondary access with the noted gate restrictions. At the December hearing, the Board of Supervisors requested a few issues for clarification, which are also identified in the staff report. As we previously discussed, the City of Rio Grande Valley Road Castillo Del Mar connection requirement included a lifted easement that the city had previously placed at the property line and required the connection to Valley Road. A second issue brought up was whether the project site could be annexed into the City of Rio Grande. The project site is not within the city's sphere of influence, and based on talking to city staff, the city is not considering annexation. As shown on this map of the city's general plan, the project site is not located within the sphere of influence. Additional comment was whether updated water conservation measures could be included as conditions of approval. The project site is outside of the Napomo Mesa water conservation area. However, standard county water conservation measures have been added to the conditions of approval. In addition, at the December hearing, Caltrans had responded to the final EIR. Caltrans had concerns regarding the generation of incidental trips at the Highway 101 El Campo Road intersection, which the left turn movement is operating at level of service F, and there are noted safety concerns at that intersection. The agency at the time did not consider the identified mitigation measure enforceable to ensure limited use of secondary access road as emergency access only. In response to this letter, county staff consulted with Caltrans, Cal Fire, County Code Enforcement, the Environmental Coordinator's Office, the applicant, and the Falcon Ridge Homeowners Association to identify a lengthy but enforceable mitigation measure to ensure that normal access, the non-emergency access would be there be enough deterrence so that persons would only use the City of Rio Grande for primary access. The condition of approval requires a third-party installation and maintenance of security camera on the gate at Coastview Drive. The third-party security company would conduct ongoing monitoring of the gate. The photo documentation would be submitted to the project's homeowners association and county code enforcement in the event of a violation, which would be if persons use access through Falcon Ridge Homeowners Association in a non-emergency situation. Quarterly monitoring reports would be submitted to the project HOA, the county, Cal Fire, and Caltrans. There's a monetary penalty for violation and or neglect of security equipment. Further control measures would be required if major violations occur, which essentially means if persons are keep continually using that gate during non-emergency situations, which may include a lock, chain, a crash gate, which would be approved by Cal Fire. This measure is proposed to be adopted in the CCNRs and the bylaws. Regarding the CEQA determination, an EIR was prepared and circulated for public review. The final EIR did not identify any significant adverse and unavoidable impacts. Therefore, it will not be necessary to adopt a statement of overriding considerations. A summary of alternatives identified in the EIR included the no project alternative. A second alternative identified is the visual resources protection alternative. This alternative considers a tract map with fewer parcels in a reconfigured manner that would avoid or further mitigate identified visual resource impacts. This alternative eliminates residential lots in the northeastern section of the parcel to avoid visual resource impacts as seen from Highway 101. This alternative would divide the remaining area into 11 residential lots and one non-buildable open space parcel, approximately 1 acre to over 3 acres in size. This map shows the visual resources alternative. Another alternative identified in the EIR is the revised access alternative A. This alternative identified in the draft EIR actually proposed what is currently the proposed project, which identified primary access through the city and secondary access through the county. The fourth alternative is the mitigated project alternative, which essentially incorporates all of the EIR recommended mitigation measures. There were two alternatives that were rejected. The first was annexation to the city of Rio Grande. This alternative was considered based on the board comments from the original requirement for the EIR, and this alternative was rejected, as noted before, because the project site is not within the city's sphere of influence and the city is not considering annexation. The second alternative, which was rejected, was revised access alternative B, which proposed an alternative access extending to El Campo Road. This alternative was rejected due to the significant impact at Highway 101 El Campo Road, in addition to oak tree impacts and visual resource impacts that would occur as if this alternative was implemented. The environmentally superior alternative identified in the EIR is the visual resources protection alternative because it accomplishes the basic objectives of the project and avoids substantially lessens almost all of the project-related significant environmental effects. This alternative incorporates the proposed access plan, reduces the number of proposed lots, and increases the size of the open space easement. This alternative would further reduce potential impacts to biological and visual resources and would further reduce the project's contribution to cumulative traffic trip generation. I'll insert just comments here. The revised condition that was submitted to you essentially adds to condition 48 regarding payment of cumulative traffic fees to the city of Rio Grande, adds the language or fee waiver issued by the city. And this would be if the city determined that the applicant is not required to pay fees into their traffic fee program due to the substantial contribution the applicant has already paid to the city for the Valley Road connection. It is staff's recommendation that the board certify the final EIR in accordance with the applicable provisions of the California Environmental Quality Act, approve the vesting tentative track map based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and conditions listed in Exhibit B, and adopt the resolution affirming the decision of the Planning Commission and conditionally affirming the application for Track 1789. This concludes staff's presentation.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Scott. Supervisor Asajian has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have several, if I may. And I want to thank you. Great presentation. Especially, I was concerned that those of us who might not have known the history of this project might not have got a full understanding. I appreciate your summarizing, but yet doing a great job with your presentation. It's interesting that Woodlands, that is 1,300 some homes, took 16 years to get approval. This is, what, 11 to 14 homes. It's taken us 18 years. So I want to thank the applicant for their patience to working with us and the city and the Falcon Reach folks and the Caltrans and Cal Fire. So it's been quite a road. Now, one of my questions is how much of prime agland are we taking away to extend the road through?
I believe it was approximately 1 acre.
That much? Well, and regardless how you deal with that, it's going to be 1 acre.
Right.
Because last time I was there with Richard Marshall before he left us, it looked like a tiny corner.
It essentially, construction of that road within the city would remove a triangle of property. The approval was actually part of a larger approval that had to do with a general plan amendment and a track map that the city and the school district and John Taylor had negotiated for that entire property. And that decision has actually already been made by the city. And
so it's not necessarily just for this to serve this project, but the future project that Lucia Mar School has in place.
Correct. It was part of a larger plan, but the city did require the payment of fees by this applicant to implement that roadway.
And I believe the city has 1-4 replacement in place for loss of agricultural land.
Correct. The applicant was required to pay the city's in lieu mitigation fee for loss of that ag land.
Here are a couple of my concerns. One is the gate. And I know the area very well, and when I started dealing with this project, I held a meeting on-site with the city of Rio Grande, with the applicants, with the Falcon Reach folks, and whoever else was able to come. The where it took us the most of the time was traffic. Even though this
project was approved by a previous board that did not include me. Condition on that, doing our EIR and bring us a written agreement with the Falcon Reach folks to gain access. And at that time, they accomplished that, but then the city came into the picture. I was a newcomer, so we want to do a little more work. And as I see the entire, as I see it now, we're going to put this camera, and we're going to issue violations to the entire homeowners association. And what I think we're going to do with this, and I'm glad Cal Fire is here to help us understand this better, we're going to put a neighbor against neighbor. And we don't know if the neighbor's kids, the kids' friends, a guest coming in and out. And pretty soon, that's going to irritate the neighborhood, and damages can happen to the cameras. And I don't see, I think it's a feel-good rather than it's doable for the number of the houses we have there. And if I was to, I don't want to bet money, obviously, but if I was to get into some kind of a contest, I would say that Falcon Reach folks now will use this development to come to Royal Grande rather than go all the way around to come to El Campo and take their lives in their hands to go to Royal Grande, go across the freeway. This will become more more attractive to go to the city, so I can see the traffic flow this direction and not the other direction. So in this case, we have another camera to go to after the Falcon Reach folks. So I don't see it fitting right. There's something missing here for me. And it being a dirt road, trying to go, and what we have done in the past with emergency access, we have gates and locks and things of that nature, which might become history as time goes on. But with the technology, maybe can be applied to the gate rather than to the cameras. So I want to put it on the table as what else can we do here and understand that this is walking distance to Valley Road, and if you want to get on 101 South, you get on Traffic Way City Road, or go to Grand Avenue to get 101 North, and it's, as I said, it's going to become more attractive for a larger community of Falcon Reach using this access than 11 residents trying to go through the emergency access when they don't have to. Unless maybe they're visiting a residence within the Falcon Reach. I just don't see it. And but you folks spend more time on this. You have a better understanding. I'm going to ask the question so you can respond to it. So my rather is go back to our old way of doing business with the gate as it exists and come up with a process. I just don't see this working. The other thing that I'm very much aware of this, and I don't know if this is the time to do it or maybe when the applicant comes back for their building permits. The applicant paid the city over $1.4, $1.6 million in traffic mitigation. That's a large chunk of money because all the traffic is going to be dumped on City of Royal Grande, on the streets of City of Royal Grande. I'm reading the present and what was in the staff report's condition 48. Why are we on the top of the $1.6 million traffic mitigation fees gone to the city? We're coming back applying another yet traffic fees, even though amount is small, but it's kind of double dipping in a sense, if I may put it that way, and I apologize for lack of better words. Having said that, but I'm reading here that this was to go back to the city of Rio Grande. First, I thought it was our fees to come back to county, let's say. And my argument there is there are no county roads that these folks are going to be traveling on. So why are we applying and making a condition when it is in front of us with the blessing of the city of Rio Grande because they have work and pay over $100,000 per structure to be able to establish this traffic pattern. So those are my two major concerns as we maybe the applicant wants us just to give them our blessings and move on because it's like an elephant getting pregnant here. waiting forever to deliver. But I cannot sit here and not conscientiously think that what are the benefits after 18 years of working all the details and trying to please Caltrans, Cal Fire, CDOT for Allegheny, County of San Luis, and yet we have a couple of things that it just doesn't line up with me well, and maybe you can help me understand better.
Gotcha. You did a good job.
John Nall, County Planning, you did a good job outlining what I think, based on my meetings with some of the board members yesterday, are really the two issues that are outstanding here today on this project. The first one, it is rather elaborate mitigation at the secondary access gate, and the reason for that was in order to satisfy two other agencies, Cal Fire one and Caltrans, the other, Caltrans didn't want folks to have unimpeded access out to El Campo. And as Rick Swan will explain to you, Cal Fire wanted to get away from their old policy of a crash gate or a Knox box type gate. And I'm going to let Rick explain that to you. With regard to the traffic fees, yes, the applicant... Go ahead, Cacho.
Mr. Noll, Mr. Chair, if I'm asking the question. But if I was to go on site with Caltrans, as I tried to explain, if you leave on that side, now I think Falcon Ridge folks will be coming through here to get to Allegheny then rather than go to El Campo. I don't need these people for whatever their needs are. Even if it's to go on 101 southbound, it's a shorter distance to travel coming via Valley Road traffic
right.
way, then go through Falcon Ridge, through Camera to whatever it might have, and travel to this residential area to get to El Campo. And as I said, tomorrow I'll be speaking to during Slocog about yet another accident that took place on El Campo and 101. There is no reason for those folks, unless they're going sightseeing, to go backwards then move forward. With the exception of one time on a weekday when school starts and when school comes out, you probably want to stay out of that Valley Road. It's a mess. But if you leave there long enough, you know to go left instead of right. As simple as that. So Caltrans should be more concerned about now traffic coming to the city, and I think it's more of a red flag for the city than ever to Caltrans, and that's why the city took their time and got the fees and mitigations in place to absorb that traffic, simply because those folks won't be going through Falcon Ridge and El Campo, but be coming to the city of Allegheny. So I don't see why Caltrans, they shouldn't have any problem with this. But that's easy for me to say, and even though I'm not an engineer, but I can have the lengthy discussion with Caltrans. But as I said, it took 18 years to bring this in front of us. I want to see it move forward, but not without at least discussing and maybe doing something about those items.
Shauna, did you have a response?
Yes, I also just wanted to clarify that the gate controls would allow, on the Falcon Ridge side, would not allow entrance into this project site except for emergency vehicles. There would be a Knox box, so the gate would not open internally from the county side into the project site. Same thing on the gate on the city side, would only allow entrance by the residents of this development, and then it would allow, you know, exit on both ends. And that requirement was from Cal Fire to allow, in the event of an emergency, that there would be free flow exit from the project site.
All with
site.
The Knox box and all
yeah.
that, and I'm glad you bring that up. But even if there was absolutely no gate there,
mm-hmm.
I don't see these people trying to get on 101 via Falcon Ridge then coming a shorter distance, easier, safer. Everything in the book tells you go this way.
And I don't think it'll be a terribly difficult problem to solve, Cacho, particularly after we hear from Cal Fire. Your board has the ability to condition this however you want to, and we'll certainly keep in mind avoiding that impact at El Campo, that circulation impact at El Campo.
Supervisor Gibson wants to speak to this, and then I'll ask Rick Swan to maybe comment from the Cal Fire perspective, if you would, please, Mr. Swan. Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you. I just wanted to be sure that I understood Supervisor Ashajian's concern. You're saying that it sounds like a good idea if Falcon Ridge were able to exit through this proposal down Castillo del Mar and get into Arroyo Grande, you're suggesting that the gate be configured to allow that to happen?
No, sir. What I was suggesting that the traffic flow could be more impacted if the traffic was allowed till I heard that the gate does not open to come through here. And I wouldn't change that without, in the absence of Ciudad Arroyo Grande, because now you're allowing a county residential area to impact more the roads in Ciudad Arroyo Grande. For that reason, I'm not suggesting that in their absence. But what I'm suggesting that those 11 homeless would not be able to go that way. There is no reason for them to be a concern for Caltrans, because it's much easier if their destination is 101 south or north, much easier to gain access through Valley Road, closer, safer, all of the above, for people residing in these homes would take this as priority 1, 2, 3 and never consider it to go the other way.
So you're questioning the premise of Caltrans' request for the mitigation.
Right.
But you know, I guess it's safer, yes, but maybe shorter, and the trade-offs. But I guess I'm trying to work within the mitigation, because that was in the EIR developed as, you know, described as a class one impact. So something apparently needs to be done. I guess I share your concern about the workability of the condition as it's crafted right here.
I mean, as I said, it's a feel good craft.
Well, reports going here and there, and to me, burdening our code enforcement people with reports and things that aren't, you know, even if this is in compliance, so all of a sudden code enforcement is doing things that aren't talking about projects being out of compliance with their conditions there, and I just don't see that that's going to be sustainable over the long haul. I certainly would like to hear from Mr. Swan about the, about why the change from sort of the previous way of doing things, which I would have assumed would have the crash gate, Knox box, basically a gate that was closed until it needed to be forcibly opened or otherwise opened during an emergency. And the one thing I do note is if you look on page 8, C18 of our staff report, you know, right at the bottom, it's numbered as paragraph 7 here. You know, if the things really get bad, you got 5 or more major violations, which takes a while to sort out exactly what that is. The following remediation actions shall occur. And the first one on the top of C9 is that you're going to pull out the security camera and you're going to go back to a raised light chain or a crash gate or something like that. So, you know, I wonder why we don't go there now. Just one other thing on top of that is that because this proposed development connects with the street system of the city of Arroyo Grande, it's not just the 11 or 16 or however many parcels in this subdivision that are potential violators of the non-emergency access through that gate. Anybody that can get on that public road and come to the end of the cul-de-sac and want to go through that gate could produce a violation that would then visit on the homeowners association of this particular subdivision. So there are just a number of things that don't add up here, and I'm all for simplicity, so I wonder if we can't go back to something a little lower tech.
Okay. Let's see. Supervisor Ovid,
if, for example, you were to take this gate down, camera everything else, and leave it as a road for Falcon Ridge to make it back to Arroyo Grande, my understanding is this road is now a, for lack of a better term, dirt road. It's not a 24-foot ride, so there would be a cost factor difference. So if we took out all the gates and everything, then we'd have to bring that road up to a 24-foot standard.
There is a short segment that will remain dirt.
But I'm just saying that I wouldn't want to say, or it would be an impediment if you left it dirt. But you know, if you're gonna eliminate all this, you're gonna have people coming from Falcon Ridge through this project.
I'm not talking about eliminating this. I don't want to be misunderstood. What I'm saying, go back to
put a two-way gate.
Put a gate there and not deal with the cameras, because as Supervisor Gibson brought it up, and I didn't want to go into details, the impact to our code enforcement and the neighborhood, it's just not doable. And again, I don't want Falcon Ridge folks to come through, because in the absence of Ciudad Arroyo Grande, that's a much larger development exists that they're going to find this road more attractive, and there's more traffic coming to their roads. And the only reason they came along and approved what's in EIR, because they're satisfied that only these folks will take access to Valley Road, and they paid to get this at a satisfactory level.
By the way, Mr. Chairman, just quickly, there is a representative from Falcon Ridge Homeowners Association here today,
okay,
just in case you need to speak with them.
Good deal. Thank you, Mr. Nall. Let's hear from our fire marshal, Rick Swan.
Thank you, Supervisor Patterson. Rick Swan, County Fire Marshal. Pardon me, I'm a little hoarse right now, so forgive the tone. The gate was a product of negotiations between us, CAL FIRE, and the regulations for secondary access, and the requirement from CAL FIRE, the issue with Caltrans on the access and the road impacts onto El Campo and 101. Caltrans did not want to have that any more traffic going on 101 in El Campo, and we agreed with that. Our portion of that is the fact that we need to maintain secondary access, as this is a dead-end road all the way from where Valley would come into. So that, those are our concerns, and that's where we come down with the gate. The gate comes into effect is that we are trying to move away from barriers, and a crash gate is a barrier. The Homeowners Association want to have limited access, so we come up with these no notice gates. In other words, you pull up to it, it opens for you in the direction of going out, in this case. That allows the homeowners in that subdivision free access out of that gate. Caltrans was worried that because of, exactly as you're saying, Supervisor Sajian, and I happen to be stuck in that Arroyo Grande High School traffic down there one day, that people would not want to go that way during that time of the day. They would want to go out through El Campo. That mitigation or the solution that we came up with is very convoluted, and it's very, I'd say, difficult. And it was difficult to work through that. But as Supervisor Gibson said, you're absolutely right. This is a try. We want to try to put the gate up there, allow the no-notice gate, and if it doesn't work, we'll go back. We're trying to move away from those things, though, because they do put up barriers that citizens do have problems with in the case of access.
Mr. Swan, could you just briefly describe how a crash gate would work? And actually, if you have the no-notice gate, if you had emergency vehicles wanting to access from the opposite side, how do they get that open? I mean, what are the problems between, say, a crash gate and a no-notice gate in terms of access in either direction, either by emergency vehicles or by people trying to leave in an emergency?
The gate, as it's currently configured, would have a Knox box or Knox key on the other side of the gate.
This would be the no-notice gate?
The no-notice gate on the secondary access is what we're talking about right now. Would have a Knox box on the outside of that gate on coming in from Falcon Crest. The emergency units would access that through there by opening that key, turning the key, and then gaining access into that subdivision from that direction if needed. Now, the crash gate works along those same lines, in essence, but there's no Knox key on that. There would be a key that the fire engine would have to have on there and on the lock to unlock it to gain access into that direction. Or in this case, as for secondary or for emergency access for folks, they would have to come up through and do basically, as it says, is crash through it. They would have to forcibly, either with pliers or bolt cutters, cut the key or cut the lock to gain make their egress out.
Okay, thank you. Are there any other questions for Mr. Swan?
Mr. Swan, I know that we've had problems, but I think we've got them worked out with these sensors that allow traffic signals to be tripped green for emergency responders, things of that nature. And I'm aware that other parts of the state have adopted that same, I guess, technology, for lack of a better term, to have those type of sensors so you don't have to get out of the truck, you don't have a Knox box. Was that ever discussed in this situation where, I mean, we could maybe move forward where you could minimize the labor, where you don't have to have a key, you don't get out for a Knox box, you've got the automatic sensor that, you know, your guys are rolling code 3, and as soon as they get within a certain range, the gate opens?
Well, you're basically talking about what's called an opticom. And that's a light that we use that turns the as we're coming up on intersections, we'll turn the intersections green for us, so it stops the oncoming traffic. There are several other projects going on in the county right now that we are talking about some of these things and trying to find some mitigation for these individual gates so that we don't have to have a Knox key for every individual gate. The technology right now does exist in the sense that you have the remote controls like you would with a garage controller, but again, security now is an aspect of this, and that's why they put the gates up, is for security. Those things are still being worked out, and from the information and from what we're trying to find on other projects, it's difficult right now. They don't have the individual gate keys that you can put on like that, other than these Knox keys, and those are require you to get out of the fire engine, unlock the gate, and move through. But that's with one key, so you only need one key for your whole area instead of a whole key ring. So I don't know if the technology is there yet for us, unfortunately.
Thank you, Mr. Swan. Supervisor,
just real quick, just on the scale of things, how big a problem is it for the public to confront a crash gate? I mean, do you have documentation of there being deaths, injuries, or other problems because people were afraid to, in an emergency, blast through a gate?
No, sir. I don't have any of that. No.
Okay.
We're just trying, we're trying to make this as easy as possible to get people out. We're trying to move away from barriers as we see them.
Okay.
Thank you. Supervisor Sashin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What are the possibilities of having those chain around a gate that each resident in this new development will have their own personal lock with a dialer on it, and which cuts down on their wanting to go because they have to get off the car, undo it, and lock it? Just that won't be attractive for somebody to go that route. It's, when I travel into ranches and every time I have to get off and open a gate, close a gate, it's almost not worth going.
We trust in that system, actually. Yeah. Out in the ranch.
So that's what I'm thinking, because I can see, I'm following Supervisor Gibson's lead here. I can see problems and I can see it's coming. Now, if this was a larger development and traffic was attractive to go either side, I'm all willing to try whatever you tell me is the best. With the size of this development, the attractiveness of going to the other direction, and for emergencies, if we can put 14 locks if you want to, and everybody has their own keys, that's another way, but I'm open for any advice. I mean, I don't mind going there because, obviously, I have all the respect for your organizations, but I can see it not working in the long run, and why add something that, knowing that we're going to end up there? The enforcement is going to be a hassle for our code enforcement. This is whole new code enforcement chapter in the way they do business. We know how we deal with buildings and this and that, but this is a whole new idea that's going to get into their department, and I don't even know if they're equipped to deal with it.
Supervisor Hassan, you're absolutely right in the sense that this is a small subdivision, and it was our opinion also that the amount of traffic going through onto El Campo was going to be very negligible. Because of the facts I've already spoken about, the horrible access that you have even going north. Southbound is bad enough, but you wouldn't even want to try to go northbound from El Campo on 101. We didn't think it was going to be that big of a deal, in essence, for these issues. Caltrans, though, has a very different opinion, and I believe, I don't want to speak for them, but from their meetings, I believe that their opinion is that one more vehicle on that is unacceptable. And so this was the action that we tried to work together. The ultimate solution will be in your hands. This is one that we're trying to do. If this doesn't work, we can go back and try the old solution. But it's something that we're trying to do to allow people to have the no notice, that they can just pull up to the gate and drive through.
Let me ask if I could. I mean, my concern, like I say, it's a very complicated system here that I really would rather not visit upon any of my county staff. if it's Cal Fire who's trying to get away from crash gates, are you in a position to be able to handle the enforcement of this?
The enforcement, I think, maybe Shauna can talk a little bit more on the enforcement issue and that path on how it goes. But it would go through Caltrans and us to look at these things, and then I think on to the Homeowners Association.
But for instance, you know, they're talking about major violations being issued, which sounds to me like something our code enforcement people would have to handle. And that's the kind of thing I really, because there's a simpler solution, even though perhaps not perfect. If it's you all who wanted to experiment with this, can you all handle the issuance of violations, the collection of fines, all the things that would make this work for us, and you can decide whether it's worth it and or whether we should go back to a crash.
And you can keep the money for the violations.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Well, this is not something that I want. Trust me. This is something that was worked out. And I don't know, Sean, if you have the enforcement issues and the process that it goes through. But I agree with you, Supervisor Gibson. This is a very different situation, and as Supervisor Sage said, it's a very small subdivision. And as I stated earlier, we didn't believe that this was going to be that big of an issue of traffic going out, but Caltrans does. And we're trying to work with Caltrans, we're trying to work with the applicant, trying to work with everybody to make this thing happen the right way, and try to also work with us so that we have tried to put this no-notice gate through.
Yeah, and I guess I see it as a sizable issue. It was identified as a Class 1 impact in terms of traffic going to El Campo, so I think we got to work within that framework myself.
Right. Yeah. Supervisor Sanchez.
Quickly, thanks, Mr. Chair. I know that it's Caltrans knows best about El Campo and 101, but did they go on site to see which way traffic could flow? It's one thing to talk about it as all the what ifs. It's another thing to go on site and say, what if I was living here and knowing exactly what direction is what and where, how would I travel? And knowing that there's also a gate there.
Cacho, I don't, John Nall, planning staff, I don't know if Caltrans actually went to the site, but they were involved during the EIR process, commenting on that document, reading the traffic reports and the analyses and the conclusions that were in there. Shauna, do you know if Caltrans ever made it to the site? I know they didn't go with us.
No, I don't know if they actually looked at the site, but we did have, actually after the December hearing, after Caltrans had submitted the letter, we did have, county staff did have a meeting with Richard Marshall at the time and Caltrans staff discussing, essentially, County Public Works and Caltrans did have some disagreement about the actual trip generation and what percentage would be going in which direction. And it was Caltrans' opinion that there may be a case where somebody may go through Falcon Ridge Estates and actually use the El Campo intersection, resulting in the Class 1 impact. And so that was the reason that they required, that we work on some additional conditions to try to further deter people from actually using that gate. And regarding the question about the fee, we did talk with Caltrans and Cal Fire about the fee, and those agencies were not equipped to issue a fee in the event of a violation, and so it was determined that county code enforcement actually would, through the ordinance, be able to issue the fee. And the intent of the fee is that if somebody accidentally disregards all the signage that says emergency access only and uses that gate, and then they have to pay a $500 fee, they probably won't do it again. And other people within the development would probably respect the fact that they don't want to pay $500 every time they try to, use that access road.
I can see Caltrans' concern if we were building a road to the county specs going through Falcon Ridge, and you say, well, gee, it's 245, I don't want to see high school traffic, I'm going to zoom through the other way. With a gate, with a dirt road, with everything else in place, but in their absence, I don't know what to say.
And if I might add, that was one of the things that we also looked at, is making that access, that the road that actually connects Castillo del Mar through to Falcon Crest, just a basic road to the rural standards so that there would be a deterrent as such to go across the gravel road instead of a paved road.
If I may at this point, I assume there's no representative from Caltrans, is that correct?
There is none, Mr. Chairman. We invited them, but unfortunately they had to go to a class today.
I see.
This would have been a good
question. On emergency access?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Ms. Scott or Mr. Swan, do you have a feeling for whether or not Caltrans would, again, their objective is to prevent any further vehicular traffic at the intersection of Belcampo and 101. Would they be satisfied with a crash gate rather than a no-notice gate? They just want some sort of barrier. Do you feel comfortable if we go in that direction that we won't give Caltrans heartburn?
I think Caltrans was more in favor of that proposal than anything, correct. It is us, the CAL FIRE, and the secondary access for the no-notice gate that really brings this issue on.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Swan.
Planning staff would agree, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. Other comments or questions for staff at this point?
My understanding is that, Mr. Swan, if we choose to go with the gate without the cameras, you're okay with that as a...
You're talking a crash gate, or are you talking a no-notice gate? A crash gate would be one that is a barrier. It would be locked. So, and a no-notice gate would simply be
one. You won't have a heartburn on that if we just went with that.
Minor.
Well, it just means they're going to take the daggum master lock with them and open the gate.
That's
the
correct.
Same thing with a Knox box. They got to get out of the vehicle and turn a key to get onto it. So what are we talking about?
It's not so much our access that we're worried about. It's the residents' access out, egress out. That's what we're worried about.
Question or comments for staff at this point? Any more?
We had a second question about traffic mitigation.
There was, Cacho, and that's why we have Mr. Glenn Marshall here with us today.
Thank you, Mr. Swan.
Marshall Glenn, the other Marshall. Good morning, Supervisors, Chair Patterson. And Supervisor Sajjan, you had mentioned something about the road impact fees. Yes, the project is located in Area 2 of the South County Road Impact Fees. As you know, that is an ordinance, and it goes with the building permits. We've looked at this, and I've had discussions with the transportation folks in Public Works over the last day or so, actually yesterday afternoon, this morning, to be exact, and we're of the opinion that our first step is there is a possibility some transportation or some trips would go to the Halcyon, which is identified in the South County Transportation Area 2 fees as, you know, area as needing some road improvements. However, it's probably pretty minimal. The majority of trips would definitely be going to Arroyo Grande. We could support, if your board so directs, looking at the line, our Area 2 line. I'll leave that up to your board to make that decision.
Mr. Chair, if I may ask Mr. Marshall this question. If you recall, Mr. Marshall, and this was what before Mr. Marshall Sr. left, we had a couple of issues in District 1 and 2, I believe, where we applied traffic fees, but upon appeal in front of us, we said that the nexus wasn't there and we waived those fees. And I feel, because I never waived any fees within the Nipomo, Area 1, Area 2, for secondary dwelling, you name it, I pretty much been pretty steady. But when I look at this one, it is that they paid $1.6 million to satisfy City of Rarogati, and that was for traffic mitigation fees. So I feel like they paid their share, and that we're coming yet with another, even though it's minor, but pretty soon it's maybe a matter of principle, a matter of are we finding nexus. I want to charge all the fees. I want to build the Willow Road. Don't misunderstand me, but feel like this is pretty much a Royal Grande issue. They got paid over $100,000 per unit, and add another few pennies, they might not mind it, but I just can't let it go without questioning and maybe asking my colleagues how they feel about it as well.
Supervisor Sajjan, you're absolutely correct. One thing that we looked at is the extension that the applicant is proposing of Castillo del Mar. isn't really a benefit to the county. It doesn't help our circulation. It does help their project. It doesn't really help anything as far as circulation as far within the county. I did bring a map showing the road fee area, if you'd like me to put that up. And you can see we've had two recent projects appeal, road fee appeals, up in the Templeton area. And very similar to this, the project was right at the road fee lines, and you had requested that.
Actually, when I was reading your report, and those were two projects that came to mind, and I'm thinking that we're doing the same thing here.
That is correct.
And not just that there were no nexus, but they have paid their fees to satisfy the EIR, to satisfy the city of Burgundy, who finally gave them the green light.
Okay.
It's not that we're not charging them. They paid quite a bit of money.
Right. Not to the county, but to Burgundy, which is
right. Which is going to absorb 100% of the traffic, yeah.
Yes, you're absolutely correct.
Supervisor Lenthal had a question.
I was just going to say, Mr. Marshall, is something we could do today, or will this be brought back at another time? Because I'm also familiar with the area, and I think it's just a matter of an interpretation of where a line is. I don't see the nexus of charging them county fees. It just seems like they've already paid the fees for the appropriate agency because it's going to impact the city of Aurora Grande. So is that something we could address today, or would they have to come back at a separate time to move this line or adjust that? Because I would support that motion if Supervisor Assagen were to make that. If we can do some housekeeping and clean that language up today, that I would be all for it.
Okay.
County Council.
May I add to that my thinking was bringing it now as we move forward. I just, then the staff is done with it and they don't have to come back. There's another appeal and you have to go through the paperwork. If we can clean house today, that would be my preference on a personal note. But again, it takes
Jim Orton from County Council's office. The traffic fee ordinance is separate from what you have before you today, and I think they'd probably have to come back at a later time to ask for a waiver or a change. But maybe the next time staff does their annual review, maybe something could be addressed at that time to deal with it.
I spoke with Dale Ramey, our interim transportation engineer, and he mentioned they are in the process of updating the fees right now. So we could update the boundary at this point if that's favorable to council.
I think that's something that could be looked at, yes.
Okay. So by the time they can actually come in for building permits, the line may already be adjusted, and it may be a moot point.
But if it is part of our motion here today to charge those fees, then later on it's a no point, but still it's a condition here, that's right. Going to create a problem.
Yes, and I'd like county council to opine on that if they would, please.
Well, if it's required by the ordinance, they would have to pay it. But if the boundaries are changed so it's no longer required, I don't think they would have to pay it.
And if we were to waive it today or remove it from the conditions of approval, we'd have to have the nexus for doing that, I presume.
But what if we simply made a finding that we per the language of the traffic fee ordinance that says that we don't see the nexus, it's not proportional and just simply not include condition 48.
I think that will be the cleanest.
I think that if 48 refers to the ordinance and the ordinance doesn't require it, I don't think they would have to do it in the future. But I think that to actually make that finding today, without having a noticed hearing under the ordinance, I would be concerned about
but
that.
It doesn't make any reference to the ordinance here.
No, actually, 48 doesn't apply to the county's traffic fee. That's a separate issue. I think it's 27AA. And that basically says, prior to issuance of building permits for the development of each lot, individual lot owners shall contribute to the county of San Luis Obispo's traffic impact fee for South County Area Benefit Area 2. So if we make no change and just leave that, and if we do change the lines prior to them coming in for building permits, it's a moot point. So we can either leave the condition because it's more of a notice to the developer that fees will be charged if they're in our area, and if they're not in our area, it's gone. But
and, Mr. Chairman, if all else fails, the applicant also has the option of appealing that at the time of building
That's
permit.
Correct.
So there's a safety net there.
Mr. Chairman, Cami Griffin County Planning, you could even go on to add to that condition only if this area is within the South County Benefit Area Number 2. If it's not at the time building permit, then it's completely moot and it's very clear in the condition.
I like that. Okay.
That's a nice one.
I like that. Good job.
So,
okay, so at the right time then, Mr. Chair, I will ask Mr.
Keep
Griffin
that on the tip of your
repeat
tongue,
that
lady.
Sentence. Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay.
Very good, thank you.
Anything else?
Thank you, Mr. Clark.
Thank you.
Okay, and there was another issue raised earlier that Ms. Scott brought up in her presentation, and that was a question regarding water service and wastewater service. And you had mentioned that the wastewater treatment issue has been successfully negotiated for this project. And what about our water service? How is that going to be managed there?
The applicant has obtained a will serve letter from Rural Water Company. And so one of the issues brought up at the December hearing was the county had recently adopted ordinance changes within the South County Area Plan, specific to the Nipomo Mesa Water Conservation Area. This project site is not within that area plan, and it's not within the conservation area. However, staff did recognize the need for water conservation measures and included additional conditions in the conditions of approval attached in this exhibit that do require all the standard county water conservation measures.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. Are there any other questions of staff? I see none currently, so I will open it to the public, though I have no request to speak from the public. Are there members there that would like to speak? Then please come forward. We will need you to fill out a request to speak form at some point before you leave this morning, but if you will, please.
Hi, I'm Brad Breckwald, Wallace Group. We're representing JH Land. Great discussion. Happy birthday, Mr. Sajjan. You've covered a lot of the items that we were interested in discussing as well. Also here today is Jim Aloja from JH Land and Ty Green. Ty will be speaking in a minute about our understandings and agreements with the Falcon Ridge Estates Property Owners Association and the MOU as well. So moving on to the questions that came up today, you know, we've basically been caught in this position of working between Caltrans, Cal Fire, the county, and everybody else in order to get this gate issue resolved. We felt that the negotiation took a lot of effort and time, and we came to a resolution that we all agreed to. I should say the agencies agreed to, and we as the applicant accepted. And again, I'd like for Ty to address some more in terms of the understanding and agreements that we have with Falcon Ridge Estates. In terms of the Condition 48, that's specific to the Arroyo Grande fees, whereas Condition 27AA is specific to the South County Area 2 fees. And we support CAMI's additional wording on Condition 27AA. The only caveat I have is if the line doesn't move, we just still want to be able to go through the appeal process. And I didn't know if that was automatic given the condition as worded. And in terms of the rest of the staff report, we felt that Shauna and the Morrow Group and John Nall and others who have been involved in this longer than I have did a great job, and Richard Marshall as well, who spent much of his career working on this as well. Caltrans was adamant about not having access to El Campo Highway 101. So I think with that, I'll move on to let Ty Green speak to the MOU.
Thank you.
Hi, Ty Green on behalf of the applicant. I wanted to kind of give a little bit of the history of how we ended up here with this agreement, because I do agree with all the comments that it is a fairly convoluted and complex agreement for a fairly complex project. It wasn't necessarily our choice that it ended up that way, but there's a lot of moving parts here. One of the moving parts is really trying to work out an agreement between the Falcon Ridge Homeowners Association and the JH Land Partnership. The access, the original agreement was to send access out through Falcon Ridge. And the reason there's an issue there is because the interior roads in Falcon Ridge have been offered for dedication but never accepted. And so in years ago, we were kind of going back and forth as well. How are we going to work this out? And there have been hours and hours of negotiations between the two agencies. Things got a little bit easier when the city of Arroyo Grande stepped in and started saying that, well, the traffic can go out the other way. And we had to go back and renegotiate a whole another agreement, which is the one you have in front of you, sort of. The original agreement we negotiated didn't have the cameras and didn't have that those kind of bells and whistles that went along with it. We had reached what we thought was an agreement with the HOA, and we were working well together. And then I think we were scheduled to come here, I believe it was March the 4th, and that morning Caltrans showed up with a letter we hadn't seen before with all kinds of objections and things. And so we did meet with them later, and it is accurate that Caltrans said that one more car at 101 in El Campo is one car too many, and left us with little choice. So where we're sitting now is with we're working well with the HOA, and we're trying to come up with an agreement that works, and we have to have an agreement before we can be here today. It wasn't like we can come in here and start negotiating the agreement. The understanding was we have to have this thing ready to go and basically sign before we can get to this point. And so we took what we could, working with Caltrans and working with Cal Fire and with the county, and came up with what we tried to make everybody happy, which may make nobody happy, but we tried to make everybody happy. And there are some things in the agreement that's how we ended up here, and it's kind of an agreement by committee in a way. But there are some things in the agreement that we recognize. One of them was the comment was, well, the county is not going to want to enforce this. And I think John might have told us that the county is not going to want to enforce this. One of the things the agreement has in it is that there's a private right of enforcement with Falcon Ridge. Because if Falcon Ridge has, they have not, I don't want to give the impression that they've been unreasonable or anything, but they have concerns that they don't want traffic coming through their property either. So some of these things we arrived at to satisfy them that there wouldn't be any traffic going through there. So they have a private right of enforcement, and it would be a nuisance action, I believe. But if the county decides we don't want to enforce, we're not going to get involved in all of this, there's still a private agreement between us and the Falcon Ridge Association where Falcon Ridge could come in and enforce it. And that would make, and you also have, if there's somebody, there was another comment that was made that it could open up anybody in the city. If anybody can sneak in and go through, then they violate it. But they violate something different if they do that. There are going to be signs out there, that talk about this is private property, no trespassing. If somebody goes through there that's a private citizen, then they've just committed a trespass and they're on the camera. So there would be an ability to go back and take care of people who weren't part of the association but who were going through that way. I can't imagine that they would anyway. And that's one of the reasons we came up with the idea of leaving the road not base straight. It's got gravel, I guess, for a certain period of time because hopefully nobody would go through that way. But that was the idea to try to discourage people. And then Caltrans came in and added quite a few things on. But I guess what I'm saying is even though I don't, no, I do recognize that these are some unusual provisions. They basically are now part of a private agreement between us and the association. So if you were to say, well, we don't want to make those conditions, we're still going to do it because that's the deal we have with the association. Otherwise, we're going to have to go back and renegotiate an agreement all over again. And I don't know if you saw the timeline, but this has been going on since 1990, and I believe even 5 years before that. So I appreciate the concerns, but I also wanted to let you know that this is also a matter between two parties. It's unrelated to the county in some respects, and it's part of our easement agreement is how this gets to be used for emergency access. And so I don't know if that explains everything or if there's any.
Supervisor Sajian.
It explains, and let me try it, and if I don't, Supervisor Lentil will translate. What are you saying that you're ready to move forward with this condition of that addresses the cameras and everything else as is?
Yes, we are.
And whoever agreed to these conditions, yet without the blessing of this board to say that, yes, we'll take charge, we'll do the code enforcement, and all of the above that, we might not be ready to do so. So how would that change what we have in place?
It wouldn't change anything except because the private right of action stays there. I'd be a little concerned if the conditions started changing in a way that was inconsistent with the agreement. because we had to incorporate the conditions of approval for this road as part of the agreement. So I would be a little concerned if those started changing, because we may have to go back and talk to the association and come back again, which is what I understand the, you know, I understand it sounds like we went and negotiated somebody and brought it to you and said we need you to approve it, yeah. But it was also kind of the position we were putting to get here.
Let me say this, then, what I'm hearing you say, don't mess with it, but on our behalf, don't hold us responsible to not follow through.
Well, and I don't want to say that, I think that's the first part of it, that don't mess with it is accurate, but they don't hold you responsible. I don't think that was quite the intent. The intent was recognizing that this may not be something the county wants to enforce. I mean, you know, and we wanted to make sure that Falcon Ridge folks had the ability to enforce it separately. So they have actually a private right of action that would not necessarily be a county citation, but it is the agreement spells out that there is a penalty for it. So
in other words, we can put this enforcement back into your hands and relieve us from...
But it would still involve county staff to enforce that, whether it be the sheriff or code enforcement or whomever. Let me ask you, Mr. Green, if I may, wasn't there, prior to this latest version of a traffic flow mechanism, an agreement to have that crash gate?
Yeah, I believe it was no access before we could get through. But that was Cal Fire's the one that came in and said no crash gate. So I don't know. I can't really remember if we ever had. You know, these things have changed so much. I can't remember if we ever had an agreement that there would be a crash gate and everybody signed off on it.
Okay, my point is though that there was a greater level of protection for the residents of Falcon Ridge than what we have now. I mean, with the no-notice gate, anybody can go through that. They do it at the risk of having to pay a fine, but before it was actually an emergency lot gate scenario.
That's
no
right,
access.
But I think the agreement there was just us talking that this is something we wanted, and then before it got reduced to writing, and there was an actual agreement that, remember, we have to deal with all the homeowners, that they have to vote on all this for the association. So before we ever got that far, then Cal Fire came in and said, no, we want this agreement, the gate that opens. And so I believe that by the time we got anything reduced to writing that people were happy with, that we had already had the Cal Fire gate in place and we didn't have a barrier. I would think that if there was a complete barrier that it would make the association happy, but the problem is, we'd have to go back and negotiate that again. I don't believe that that's going to fall under what we have here.
Okay, thank you, Supervisor Gibson. You had a comment.
Well, I was just wondering from the applicant's standpoint, if this board were to adopt conditions that simply said put a crash gate there rather than the cameras and all that,
we'd probably still have to put the cameras up. Because of the easement agreement does not call out for an alternative like that. We would have to either negotiate with the HOA not to put the cameras up, or we'd have to go ahead and do it. Because that's how that's what we had to do to get here today.
Mr. Green?
Okay. Supervisor Lenthal.
I'm sorry.
Supervisor Ovid.
Thank you. Mr. Green, I think you answered part of my question. I was just thinking that, to me, the crash gate provides an enhanced level of protection. So it's not like we're going backwards. But if what you're saying is, then we've got to start all over with this renegotiation process. I respect your position, too. So I'm not trying to make it any more convoluted than it has been. I'm just trying to see if we can get some simple understanding, because on the surface, it would seem to me that the crash gate is the way to go.
And we thought so, too. I mean, but there are other agencies that were involved, and I don't pretend to know, you know, that we don't really get to tell the other folks what to do very much. They were telling us what to do, and so and I appreciate that. I suppose I'm thinking out loud here. I suppose one thing you could do is say, you can adopt these conditions or a crash gate subject to, you know, I just wouldn't want to have us in a position where we had to go back and renegotiate with the homeowners association, because it takes probably 90 to, you know, it takes a long time to do that, because they have to go through the process of going through their election and they send the ballots out, and because of the way it's set up. So
I'm not asking you to do that, but I would ask county council, is that doable? We could have an and or equivalent or recommendation or a finding on our part that if they could work out that agreement, that we would certainly support a crash gate.
I think that's within your discretion.
It seems like CDF or Cal Fire supported that, so I don't think we're really, you know, creating a nightmare other than the timeline. But if that's something that you choose to do, or your organization and people choose to do, I would certainly not want to close the door today or restrict you from the option to do that, because just on the surface, I would think that crash gate would be a lot cheaper to build and maintain than having these cameras and all this monitoring and things going on out there.
I agree with you. I mean, this is going to be a complicated. Like I said, it wasn't. This wasn't what it looked like the first time. But
well, so I would support if we can come up and craft some language that gives them that option to use a crash gate if they're able to work that out with today's finding. Cammy, can you pull a rabbit out of your hat and come up with that language too?
Okay, Supervisor.
Well, I see John Nall shaking his head, so I know
she
can.
No. She can.
Actually, if you do that, you simplify it, because my question to Mr. Green was going to be that you have the option, if something else comes up, to come back and reopen this issue.
Right.
Although a de novo opens up everything, so this makes it much simpler, and that would be the way to go.
Yeah, I don't think I agree with you. I don't think I'd come back de novo on this project's been going on too long.
Oh, come on.
Is there no other questions? And thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Green.
Public?
I
no.
Opened it to the public. I do have no request to speak, just the applicant.
Yeah, with that, Mr. Chair, I'm going to try to make a motion by...
I'll come up with some language for you.
Yeah, I'll get to it in a minute. To adopt and approve the staff's recommendation with some minor amendments, and I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Griffin with the proper language about the two items, the gate and the county fees.
We want a trail list till the afternoon.
Next item.
And if we need to, we can make it a tentative if you want to bring it in the afternoon for a quick...
Do you want to give her a specific direction, Supervisor Sargent?
Yeah, I want to...
Just do the direction. Let them make the language.
Right.
Okay, direction will be that... We settle or give the applicant the options that we will consider and approve gate, crash gate only with numerous locks on it, one for each resident and any other personnel.
Yeah, let's
one
not
lock
get
several keys.
Crash gate. Leave
just crash gate.
Don't get any more.
And two, that upon staff's finding of the fee, what is the proper... The area for if there is no access that within the administrative level they can waive the fees or
27AA addition
the double A condition.
Right, adding the language at the end of that says if this area is within the South County benefit area number 2.
Second.
Okay, and this is a tentative motion, and staff will bring it back. After the break?
No.
Unless, staff, is it clear what we're saying here now? You're able to deal with that?
I think so. It's just a matter of, I think we would have to put it in a number of places to make sure that we're captured at all. And I would look to council as to whether this needs to be tentative for us to bring back specific language.
Sure.
I think it'd be better to come back with the specific language.
Okay, and give the applicant a chance. Okay, Mr. Chair, in that case, my motion is tentative to bring this item back this afternoon, and it's your discretion if you want it the first thing in the afternoon or after the public comment period to revisit it, and that will also give staff a chance to visit with the applicant to be sure that both parties are in agreement with what we want to try to do here.
Okay, second concur. All right, so we have a tentative motion to approve this with modifications, and staff will bring that back this afternoon at 2 p.m. So can we do that with a voice vote, Madam Clerk? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. That will move on to... our next item, item C2, Ms. Wilcox will present that item.
That was an organ.
And would you introduce it, Madam Clerk?
Item C2 is a hearing to consider an ordinance amending the County Code Section 2.40.080, the County Service or Civil Service Commission rules extending the probationary period for sheriff's correctional officers. This item was introduced May 20th, 2008. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Wilcox.
Thank you, Chairman Patterson, Gail Wilcox, County Administrative Office.
The item before you today is a request to increase the probationary period of the correctional officers from 6 months to 1 year. There's language in the county ordinance relative to the probationary period. There's also language in the civil service rules and our memorandum of understanding with the Deputy Sheriff's Association. Sheriff Hedges requested this change. The probationary period for deputy sheriffs and dispatchers is currently 1 year, and he just wanted it to mirror the probationary period for the deputies and dispatchers. The Civil Service Commission approved the rule change. The Deputy Sheriff's Association signed the amended MOU. Final step is the board agreeing to amend the ordinance. Staff's recommending that you do so, and it will go into effect 30 days following your approval. And that concludes my comments.
Very good. Thank you. Are there any questions for Ms. Wilcox? Seeing none, I'll open it to the public. But I have no request to speak from members of the public, so I'll close public comment, bring it back to the board.
Second. Waive reading.
Please.
Thank you.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we approve staff's recommendation. This requires a roll call vote, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Linthal.
Aye.
Mr. Asagian.
Aye.
Mr. Ovitt.
Aye.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Patterson.
Aye. Motion carries. We'll adjourn to closed session, but prior to that, I'll open it to the public for comment on closed session items. I have no request to speak, so I'll close it to the public, and we will adjourn to closed session, reconvene here in open session at 2 p.m. Oh, County Council, you want to opine on how long we'll be in closed session? I'm sorry.
Predicting about 40 minutes.
Thank you. Please take your seats.
Where was that written? Therefore, it shall be.
Please take your seats and we'll begin the meeting. Mr. Barrow?
Barrow!
Others? Please take your seats so we can begin the meeting.
Thank you.
We'll begin the afternoon session with a report out of closed session.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. The board did meet on much longer than I estimated.
But you're getting better.
I forgot an hour when I said an hour and it was really an hour and 40 minutes. There was no final action taken, and so no further reports required.
Thank you. We have an item that we're continuing from the morning session. We're going to conclude that before we have our afternoon public comment period on items not on the agenda. Mr. Nall, do you want to lead us through
Mr. the... Mr. Chairman, I will do that. We went ahead and with your board's direction, we revised the conditions of approval. I've handed that out to each one of you. Council has it, the clerk has it. And the applicant, we had a chance just before we got started to go through it with the applicant. They're in agreement, and they're nodding their heads north-south. And so I've talked to the clerk about incorporating these changes into the resolution. We have figured that out, and so I think we're ready to go.
Okay. With that...
Mr. Chair, if there are no other questions and both parties have agreed... I'm going to, for the sake of moving this forward, I'm going to approve the amendments to the approval.
Second.
Okay. And County Council, since we are revisiting this, is it necessary to go to public comment again on this item?
I don't think so. I think you can just make a motion on it.
Okay. And we have that. Motion and second. So, Madam Clerk, roll call, please.
Mr. Chair, before you jump into the roll call, if I could just quickly, we just noticed a couple of really, really, really minor changes. On 53, condition 53, we noticed that the gate itself isn't mentioned as being maintained in working condition. So both 53 and the main body and then 53A, we should also mention that the gate itself needs... to be maintained also.
By the Homeowners Association?
You know, by the security
system, the security company, I'm sorry.
If you want to add that language, I'm okay with it.
Okay.
So we'll work with the... spell it out, or you got it?
It would just be and
under 53A, security monitoring equipment and the gate.
And then in 53A, at the very interesting, ensure the full functioning of the security system and gate.
And the gate.
And that way there isn't a question.
Okay.
And those are... That's
may your wishes come true.
Okay. Madam Clerk, do you have those changes?
Yeah, those and okay. Those are just part of the conditions that are outlined in modifications to Exhibit B.
That's
and
correct.
And the motion maker and the second agree with those revisions.
Correct.
Correct.
Okay. Mr. Asajian? Hmm.
I'm sorry, there's a question.
Yeah. I just want to make sure that I was just making sure Madam Clerk was clear on the motion. Was the motion also to certify the EIR and,
right.
And
staff
do all the staff's recommendation? Okay, I just want to be sure. Okay.
Mr. Asajian?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye. Okay. Thank you all very much. Thank you for working
you,
through
Mr.
your lunch hour to craft that final language. And with that, we'll move on to our afternoon session of public comment. We do have a few requests to speak. I would like to ask any of you wishing to speak during public comment on items not on the agenda to please turn in your request to speak forms now. And my first request to speak is Gwen Taylor, followed by Lindy Owen. Ms. Taylor, yes, I'm sorry.
Good afternoon. My name is Gwen Taylor. I'm a resident of Los Osos. I also am a resident of what is referred to as Cuesta by the Sea. This is an area in which there is a lot of, we'll call it summer activity, a lot of rentals that take place. People who have residents that do not live there permanently, but let them out, meaning rental, leasing. And there are many times when there are numbers of persons at one residence where there should have been maybe 2-3 max. This morning you had a lady come in from Sunset Terrace, which is not very far from where we are, and her name was Catherine Rossi, and she was expounding on the problems of rentals with numerous cars, lots of noise, and many people. I would ask that this board have a hearing in which there are made available a particular time for persons who live not necessarily in coastal areas, as well as those who see that there are more and more part-time residences or residences being used for motels, hotels, or whatever you wish to call them. These places have been developed as individual residences, and many times, as in Cambria and Cayucas, they are being used above and beyond what they were developed for. Please hold a hearing, allow the public to come in and comment on this, because it is a growing problem, not only along the coast, but inland also. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. Lindy Owen, followed by David Dugan.
Good afternoon. Lindy Owen from Los Osos in the Prohibition Zone. I am inviting you all to realize that we are at a turning point in this county to do something green, to do something gigantic that could actually bring people to study a solution in Los Osos to wastewater and water reuse. What is happening is a very slow process to, I think, drive us a different direction, left over from the past direction that was going on. If we need a project to see how to design a green technology sewer, Los Osos is it. We are the prime situation. One reality that I don't think anybody realizes it is if we have a power shortage and outages that cannot be kept, where we cannot keep our electrical outlets online, every standard sewer, municipal sewer operation in this county will come to a standstill. Those that are on septic tanks will continue to operate because they take zero energy. the KIT study in Los Osos proves that 0.1% of the nitrates in E. coli coming out of the seeps were human. It means that we don't even have a problem in Los Osos, and the solution that is being designed for us is the standard solution that has been used for the past 60 years and is now failing. It's failing in Morro Bay. It's failing in Arroyo Grande. If you want to talk about nitrate solution and wastewater treatment, we can do a great job in Los Osos, but I'm urging you to get on track and stop this process that the county is using of breaking in things into little tiny pieces so that you can't look at a holistic view of system A, system B, system C. We should have six systems in front of us and be able to actually determine which has got the lowest carbon footprint, which is the lowest energy, which is does the best job, and this is not coming out of this process. So I beg you to please have somebody evaluate whether this process is going to get us to the right place. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Owen. David Dugan, followed by Andrew Christie.
Dave Dugan, Los Osos. I'm just going to speak about the Regional Water Quality Control Board right now. I'm noticing their agendas now that they are putting out on their agendas the codes which they need to follow whenever they do a closed session. They never used to do that until I started ragging on the fact that they were violating the Begley-Keene Act. But the only code that they aren't referring to is a code that states they can't talk about whether or not they're going to have something agendized or not agendized. That's not a litigation item or adjudicated item. And that's the lesson they needed to have learned, but since the time limit has passed for them to be able to, first of all, have a judge order them to tape record all of their closed session items so that he can monitor what they talk about, but as well as they got away a violation that was a misdemeanor, is withholding information from the public that the public should need to know, and they got away with that. Now it's my understanding that they and others are trying to lobby the legislators in Sacramento to allow them to refer dischargers to the Attorney General's office without having to have a hearing at the Regional Water Quality Control Board. Just one more layer of our individual rights being peeled away by the Regional Water Quality Control Board, and they are going to try to do away with that part of the process. They say for expediency, but I think it's a clear statement by their part that they don't have real evidence that we could present it in a way, such a way that they can actually do the things they've been doing to individuals in Los Osos. Now, it's my understanding that if this new legislation does go through, the moment they want to, they can take any individual in Los Osos or anywhere else within their purview and turn their names over and their situation over to the Attorney General's office to be prosecuted as a criminal offense, which is one of the items that we spoke towards at the individual CDO hearings, where we didn't want to tell them that, yes, we're violating, yes, we are using this, or yes, because we would basically be saying, well, you can just turn us over. We would turn our names over to the Attorney General's office as violators. But they're trying to do away with that layer and circumvent our individual rights. And I just thought I would bring that up for the public at large, not just for Los Osos, but anybody who owns a septic tank. You'll lose that individual right. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dugan. Andrew Christie, followed by Al Barrow. Yes.
afternoon, Mr. Chair, Honorable Supervisors. I'm Andrew Christie. I'm Chapter Director for the Sierra Club in San Luis Obispo County. This was the subject of a New Times article 2 weeks ago, but there's nothing like having the evidence in front of you, so we put this graphic together. What you are seeing in the box on top is from the January 25th, 2007 staff report to the Planning Commission on the appeal of the Planning Director's decision that the proposed sale to state parks of county land in the Oceano Dunes State Vehicular Recreation Area would be in conformity with the general plan. The text in that box is one of the applicable planning standards listed in the staff report. This is South County Coastal Area Planning Standard 9, ORV use area, except it isn't quite. As the staff report reproduced it, the policy begins, ORV use shall be permitted only in identified unfenced vehicular use area. No recreational ORV use shall be allowed in the designated natural areas, end quote. The text in the lower box is the actual full text of Planning Area Standard 9. The policy actually begins, ORV use shall be permitted only in identified unfenced vehicular use area. These areas are identified in Figure 4, end quote. It ends with this sentence, the map of ORV use areas indicates a buffer area along these critical interface areas, end quote. These two sentences from Planning Area Standard 9, and only these two, were excised from the staff report's representation of applicable planning standards. Both refer to the map known as Figure 4 and its designated buffer areas, which you can't quite see there. The staff report and staff were silent on the existence of Figure 4 and the certified LCP's explicit designation of county land as a buffer. Just how important the news of this map's existence was to the public process became clear after we brought it to the commissioner's attention and they voted unanimously to overturn the decision of the planning director that the sale of the land would conform with the general plan. Commissioners made it clear that this map was the reason why they made that decision. We discovered the editorial removal of all references to the map about a year later by chance. This has nothing to do with how one may feel about leasing versus selling or off-road recreation or the preservation of a rare coastal dunes complex. This is about the distortion and suppression of information in an allegedly impartial report that was supposed to serve as the basis for a $5 million land use decision. As all our parents would say, these two sentences didn't get up and walk away. A supervisor needs to convene a meeting with management at Planning and Building, the folks with whom the buck stops, and ask the question, what exactly and in detail happened here? Responsibility needs to be assigned and appropriate action taken. There is no reason to think this has never happened before. It must never happen again. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Christie. Al Barrow.
Good afternoon. My name is Al Barrow, Coalition for Low-Income Housing, and that's my card, is, if you don't mind showing that. I also want to show you last month's Sierra Club, just by coincidence. The director of the Sierra Club was speaking before me. And the front page is dedicated to greenhouse gases and the coming climate protection in Slo County. And I think we all need to be aware that we need to be good stewards of our air. And there's AB 32, which is a law signed by the governor. I think that was in August of 2006, made into law. We do need to comply with those issues. The second issue I want to discuss very briefly is Coalition for Low-Income Housing. That's not what I'm supposed to be looking at. I just gave you my card to show. If you can just show, that's not supposed to be up there.
She did have it up there. We did see it, Mr. Barrow. Thank you.
Well, this is for my comment on the sewer later on. This is public comment, right? Is this public comment for the afternoon, right?
That's what we're doing, yes.
I'd like to just have my card up, please. So I'm an advocate of affordable housing, and I wanted you to know that the Sierra Club nationally considers affordable housing to be an essential element of sustainability. So as we strive to make our communities more sustainable with less driving trips and the rest of it, we don't want to import workers from Santa Maria to have to drive back and forth every day. We need housing stock for our workforce here. It's just sensible. And that lowers the impact on our environment. Affordable housing, according to the National Low-Income Housing Coalition, which you can find by going on the web, shows that housing is probably the most expensive portion of everyone's income, and it's risen dramatically. Many people are paying over 50% for their income for their housing, and that shorts their budget for food, for health care. Disposable income is smaller, so they can't operate in a community as a spender and consumer as well. So affordable housing is an important aspect for this county to work on. You as a board created the Slow Housing Trust Fund in an effort to help that, and we appreciate that greatly. There are some properties that the county has now that are zoned would be in compliance with affordable housing, and we'll be asking you to look at those and see if you will not approve affordable housing units on those properties. Dairy Creek Golf Course is one of them, and it is upside down in the county budget. That could be made up by the affordable housing.
And Mr. Barrow, your time is
up. My time is up. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That concludes my request to speak during public comment. So I have that for item D1.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. This was for items not on the agenda. So I'll close public comment, and we'll move on to agenda item D1. Madam Clerk, would you read that, introduce that item, please?
Item D1 is the update on the Los Osos Wastewater Treatment Project, 2nd District. A is to accept the monthly project update from county staff. B, receive public comment on issues related to the Los Osos Wastewater Project. C, approve a contract with Public Financial Management, Inc. in the amount of $90,000. Plus bond issuance fees to provide financial services in relation to the project, and D, approve a resolution in connection with the financing the project and declaring the intent to reimburse certain expenditures from tax-exempt obligations. E is to authorize the Public Works Director or his designee to receive and deposit voluntary assessment prepayments into the Los Osos Wastewater Project Preliminary Prepaid Trust Fund and execute notice of discharge of assessment liens to release the assessment liens upon voluntary payment. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign.
Very good. Thank you. Mr. Waddell, are you leading off?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Supervisor Patterson and members of the board. I'm John Waddell with the Public Works Department. Also with me is John Diodati and Will Clemens, who will be highlighting the action items, but first I will give the monthly update, which will be focused on water resource issues. So the main topics I'll be covering are our water versus wastewater authority for the county, also our ongoing cooperation with the community water purveyors, and expectations for the upcoming draft environmental impact report. The county is developing the wastewater project for Los Osos under Assembly Bill 2701, which states the following: wastewater efforts may include programs and projects for recharging aquifers, preventing saltwater intrusion, and managing groundwater resources to the extent that they are related to the construction and operation of the community wastewater collection and treatment system. So, Assembly Bill 2701 gives the county authority to collect and treat wastewater and also gives some responsibilities for reuse and disposal related to water supply. That's why it's important to recognize the individual decision-making responsibilities of both the county and the community water purveyors. For example, the water purveyors maintain their responsibilities for their pumping practices as they relate to groundwater management. And also, while the wastewater project can treat wastewater to recycled standards, it would be the water purveyors that would have the ability to implement a recycled water program. So cooperation is required in order to develop a long-term sustainable water supply for the community. Previous studies have indicated there's approximately 550 acre feet per year of seawater intrusion resulting from overdraft of the lower aquifer. So the county in the project development have identified a number of levels related to the mitigation of seawater intrusion. I just want to note that these levels are not analogous or related to the levels of the resource capacity study and the level of severity 3 that was certified for Los Osos last year. This is a different scale, different definitions. but to summarize these seawater intrusion mitigation levels, we've identified level one as the required mitigation for potential impacts that the wastewater project may have on the water supply and seawater intrusion. Level two would be additional mitigations provided by the wastewater project as they relate to the construction and operation of the wastewater project, in other words, keeping with AB 2701. Level three, then, would address the existing deficiencies and achieve a balanced basin at the current population and present water use. And then level four was achievement of balanced basin for build-out, and so that would be providing future water that would be needed to develop vacant properties. So developing a balanced basin for the current population and addressing the current overdraft, the wastewater project can go to level two, seawater intrusion mitigation, and then the changes in pumping practices and water management by the water purveyors would then be able to, maybe able to get to level three. The water purveyors are currently working on ongoing measures to address the water supply issues. They are developing interties amongst the different water agencies to allow for better basin-wide management of their resources. They're modifying their pumping practices and introducing nitrogen removal technology, which will allow for better utilization of the upper aquifer. So the county and the purveyors are working together then to analyze these improvements and the potential for the wastewater project to maximize the mitigation to meet existing demand. Beyond the existing demand then will be the needs for balancing the basin for build-out, essentially achieving a sustainable water supply for the community through build-out. So the county and the purveyors are cooperating to develop a basin management plan that will identify the responsibilities of the agencies and will identify the benefits for future development. It will be important for the wastewater project to maintain reuse options for the treated effluent, and then the water purveyors, though, would drive the decisions for the water supply enhancements through reuse and recycling. Identification of the benefits for future development would be related to a potential second Proposition 218 assessment vote. That second vote would not only cover the fair share that undeveloped properties have for the wastewater project, but also the costs of providing additional water that it would be necessary for them to develop. Now, how does all this relate to the environmental impact report? The upcoming draft environmental impact report will focus on the wastewater project alternatives and the potential impacts and identify mitigations for those. As far as water supply enhancements, it will take a programmatic approach. And by programmatic, it will identify a range of water supply options in anticipation of likely reuse by the community. In other words, it will leave the options open for a potential future EIR, and it would be expected that then water supply enhancements would require a separate EIR for their implementation. That concludes the update. Before I'm going to turn it over to Will Clemens, and also just want to note that Mark Hutchinson is also in the audience to answer questions regarding the environmental analysis.
Yes. Are there questions for Mr. Waddell at this point? I'd like to ask one quickly, if I may. You spoke a number of times, Mr. Waddell, of the need for the county to cooperate with the water purveyors, and I know that's been somewhat problematic in the past. Do you have some thoughts on how we can ensure that that does occur? The county has jurisdiction over the management of the wastewater, but not over the water supply. And are you working currently with the water purveyors, and you see a spirit of cooperation there? I'm just curious because, again, in the past, we haven't always had the cooperation we'd like to have from the purveyors, not only in Los Osos, but in other communities as well.
Sure. Well, we are currently working with the water purveyors and working to develop the basin management plan. There's ongoing litigation, so some of the details of that are still subject to that litigation. But it is common knowledge that the purveyors in the county are working cooperatively. Some of these measures that the purveyors are already taking, like agency interties, are evidence of that cooperation. And so, moving forward into the wastewater project, we anticipate working together further, and that's why we are meeting regularly and working on a plan to address the water resources and the water supply enhancements that could come out of the wastewater project.
Does AB 2701 give us any teeth and ability to require that things get done relative to the two?
Well, essentially the language that I read at the beginning, that the wastewater project may include programs for managing groundwater resources to the extent that they're related to the construction operation of the wastewater project,
mm-hmm.
is in AB 2701, but the authority for their own water systems remains with the water purveyors.
Okay. Mr. Gibson, thank you, Mr. Wandell. Mr. Gibson,
yeah,
did you have a
comment? Yeah, I thought I could help clarify that. Thank you, Supervisor Ovid. Your institutional knowledge of the microphone system is much appreciated. I know. Understood. We've been discussing, this has been a topic of some discussion, exactly where the authority of the county ends on wastewater and how you transition then into helping the water supply, which is clearly an important item. The way we're reading 2701, the way we discuss it with the water purveyors, and I think there's basic agreement, is that the county's proceeding toward the design of a wastewater treatment plant that will make the effluent available to water purveyors as a source of new water. They may yet have to work on it. It's not ready to drink right out of the pipe that comes out of the wastewater plant. But you would contrast that, in a hypothetical sense. Suppose the county were designing a wastewater plant that took the effluent and just piped it out to sea. So that would be take the effluent, get rid of it, we're done. But no, that's not what we're doing. We're, working with different means of disposal, different ways in which the water purveyors could get a hold of the effluent as a new source of water. So it's in that cooperation and trying to identify what the infrastructure is necessary on their side to take advantage of what might rightfully be considered a resource coming out of the wastewater plant. And those are the discussions we're having right now.
Very good. Thank you. Are we ready for Mr. Clemens? And thank you, Mr. Waddell, for taking that on. I know it's not an easy answer. Mr. Clemens.
Chairman Patterson, members of the board, Will Clemens with your Public Works Department. I'll be speaking to two of the recommendations today. The first one is a recommendation to approve a contract with Public Financial Management in the amount of $90,000. They will be performing some specialized financial services for us, helping to assist us in developing a funding plan for the project, whatever that project might be. They will also be assisting us as our financial advisor on any bond issuance that we do. And our recommendation is based on your policy adopted in June of 2006 regarding sole sourcing of consultant contracts related to this project, as well as their extensive knowledge of the county and the past successful financings that we've done with Public Financial Management. Those include, for our department alone, the Lopez Dam Seismic Remediation Project, the Nacimiento Water Project, the Vineyard Drive Interchange, the Sherwood Drive Underground Utility District, and we've received very favorable financing terms on those projects, and we're sure that PFM will help us with this project successfully as well. The second recommendation that we have is a resolution with a very long name, but basically what that does, it's similar to a resolution you passed in March of 2007, which allows the county to be reimbursed from any bond proceeds. And in March of 2007, there was a maximum amount that the county could be reimbursed of $5 million. But now that you've increased the project budget to $6 million, we needed to pass this additional resolution. And we've had some feedback from the community that some concerns that this $6 million resolution is somehow tied to the state revolving fund of the district, the CSD, And I can assure you this has nothing to do with that state revolving fund loan. This is simply the $6 million that the County General Fund has advanced to the project so far. And I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Clement? Seeing none, Mr. Diodati, are you up?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Mr. Chairman Patterson and members of the board. My name is John Diodati, and I'm with the Public Works Department, and I'm going to be discussing the last action item on today's agenda, which is to authorize the Director of Public Works to execute notice of discharge of assessment liens when we receive voluntary prepayment assessments. As you recall, AB 2701 creates a unique situation where the county cannot formally collect property assessments until after the due diligence period. And since we're currently in the due diligence period, and since property owners have the ability to pay their assessment liens if they choose to now, we have worked with the Auditor Controller's Office to create a trust fund called the Voluntary Prepayment Trust Fund, which will hold voluntary prepayments which are made by property owners during the due diligence period right now. Previously, I was before your board discussing how reimbursements would be handled for voluntary prepayments made during due diligence. There were two scenarios. One is if the county formally accepts the project, then monies held in the trust fund will be transferred to the project fund. If the county does not move forward with the project, we would refund those payments to the current property owner at the time of the assessment refund. Today, what staff is asking for you to do is to authorize the Director of Public Works, or their designee, to be the department which receives and deposits voluntary prepayments into the trust fund, and that upon voluntary prepayment, the Director of Public Works or their designee is authorized to execute the notice of discharge of assessment liens. And this is a form that will be sent to the clerk's office notifying them that the assessment has been paid, and it will give them instructions to discharge the assessment lien from that property. So this concludes our presentation today. If you have any questions for any of us, we'd be happy to answer them.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Diodati. Are there questions from members of the board for staff? Seeing none, I will open the floor to public comment. I do have several requests to speak, and we'll begin with David Dugan, followed by Piper Riley.
Dave Dugan, Los Osos. As far as bonds are concerned, you're not able to sell bonds until after the due diligence and the county is going to accept the project. Is that correct? That's one question. And I got the other question answered about the assessment. I would like to remind this board and staff that once you make water from the wastewater that can be used for reuse, the county becomes a purveyor. You are and will be a purveyor when that water comes out of there for reusable. I also point out that potable water for residential uses takes priority in California code over irrigation. Residential use comes first. I also like to point out that looking at, I went to the Department of Water Resources and how they're set up, and that they will give preference to any project that has a water reuse element, so in their wastewater project. And so I think that's a plus. Point out three things. Water reuse, you become a purveyor, the county can make money off of that water. Two, if it's done in such a way, the county can be a septic receiving station as well. That's more revenue. Three, biosolids processing, another revenue-generating process. You can't do that in the Midtown site, but you can do it out of town. There's plenty of room for that. So you've got three areas where the county can make money on the reuse element of a wastewater project. So it says you may, in 2701, become a water purveyor, basically. Didn't say water purveyor, but as long as it's part of the project. California code states it, If you have water for reuse, you are a purveyor. If you read California code for water, especially when I went to the Department of Water Resources, they made it clear that new sources of water, which is reusable water, is by anybody, is a purveyance of water. Revenue generating, gentlemen. The county needs money, doesn't it? So if you set it up for water reuse, septic receiving, and biosolids processing, the county's going to make money off this project. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dugan. Piper Riley, followed by Bill Moylan.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chairman Patterson, Board. I'm Piper Riley from Los Osos. 2 years ago, I bought my home, and I was told that there was a sewer issue. Less than a year later, I received a letter that stated I was polluting from my illegal septic and faced with potential of $36 million fines and rising. Illegal septic? This was news to me. I just bought my house with a clean title. Alarmed, I spent the next several months corresponding with the CCRWQCB on fixing the problem, which turned out to be nitrates. There are literally hundreds of on-site systems on the RWQCB's website, many of which would solve our nitrate issues in an environmentally sound and economical way. Could I use one of these? After months of circular talk with Mr. Packard, the Water Board stated that State Water Code 13360, manner of compliance, was a moot point in Los Osos, and that we must do whatever the county says, even if it meant doing things the old way, regardless if such actions would cause spills, fines, and more construction costs in fixing foreseeable and preventable problems. Now bewildered, I came before your board in the fall of 2007, and I have consistently asked that Mr. Ogren and staff be redirected from producing a repeat of the old doom project and to please go green. In this day and age of environmental and economic emergency, it is grossly irresponsible to not act in a sustainable manner. This means having a cradle-to-cradle type of mindset and not cradle-to-grave. Sustainability means protecting and not depleting our resources, be they environmental or economic. It means finding solutions to problems so that the environment, the economy, and the people all come out on top. It's a win-win-win bottom line, and it is achievable. Sustainability is not some lofty goal or a theory, but it's an imperative practice whose tangible and measurable objectives are simply the best possible planning, because it produces the best value for the money. This works on an important theme in sustainable development, that whenever you are dealing with a complex project or problem, solutions will emerge that benefit everybody in the sustainability triad, that being the people, the economy, and the environment. It's kind of like a stool. It won't stand on one leg or even two. It needs three sturdy, even legs to build a good foundation. And that's what a sustainable project will produce. Yet 8 months later, Mr. Ogren and staff are still not moving forward in this direction. Instead, they continue to look towards old Tri-W projects with gravity collection and conventional treatment. A few more expensive whistles added on, yet it's still the same harmful and grossly expensive project as ever. Not being sustainable at a minimum will mean that we cannot be self-reliant, and that will put an increased burden on the rest of the county. And would that be fair or productive to any of us? I don't think so. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Riley. Bill Moylan, followed by Al Barrow.
Good afternoon, Chairman, board members. I wish you good luck on your elections today. Some of you may recognize me. My name is Bill Moylan. I have the dubious honor of having received the CDO from the Water Board. Believe me, no one is more interested in getting a quick solution to the wastewater problem in Los Osos than I am. I am fervently seeking a solution to the wastewater problem, and I want this crisis resolved as soon as possible. The county has been given the go-ahead by the peoples of Los Osos positive 218 vote for the construction of a wastewater treatment plant. This is good. But what is extremely important is that the county build a treatment plant that we in Los Osos can live with, that is sustainable, environmentally sound, and economically viable for the citizens of Los Osos. It is imperative that the county build a plant that is the most technologically advanced, one that is green, and leaves the smallest footprint possible. In other words, a plant that works with nature. This county was the first in the nation to pass a no smoking in public places law. It is also the county that can build a state-of-the-art green wastewater treatment plant. Bear in mind that the $25,000 per household from this 218 vote is our money you will be dealing with. This is not a carte blanche offer that gives the county the right to spend our money any way the county sees fit. This is entrusted money that we want the county to spend in a way that benefits us. A proper benefit is one that looks to the future with economic justice, environmental considerations of the highest nature, and a wastewater solution that is sustainable. It is our money. You must not spend more than you need to spend to get the best environmental and sustainable benefits. Remember to build a wastewater treatment plant that we in Los Osos want. The people that take their time to come here and speak to you are the ones that need to be listened to. Having said that, if indeed what Lindy Owen said about 0.1% of the nitrates and other pollutants coming out of the seeps in Los Osos are of human origin, then the county needs to insist that the Water Board do verifiable scientific analysis of nitrates in the upper aquifer to determine the origin of nitrates. The Water Board has admitted in public hearings that no scientific studies of these upper aquifer nitrates has been done. Look at Morro Bay, 90 parts per million in one of their wells. They've been sewered for 50 years. Obviously, the nitrates aren't coming from the sewers. Dr. Wickham, a respected limnologist and wastewater expert, has said that he believes the nitrates in Los Osos Aquifer are derived from plant degradation. This is a highly respected limnologist, study of freshwater biology. Scientific testing could be done for probably $250,000, which is a fraction of a $200 million sewer plant. So if the Water Board won't do this scientific analysis, then it's imperative that the county come up with $250,000 to finally, once and for all, determine the source of the nitrates. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Moylan. Al Barrow, followed by Maria Kelly.
Good afternoon. My name is Al Barrow, and I want to demonstrate what a conventional gravity collection system and a step collection system behave like. The first demonstration is that a gravity collection system is slightly sloped. If you can see how I raised my right hand, about a 1/16 of an inch. That has to have at least a 1/16 of an inch. Usually an 1/8 of an inch is preferable, but somewhere in between a 1/16 of an inch and an 1/8 of an inch. It also has to have half of the pipe always empty, so the laterals that are dumping in that are connected to the top of the pipes can flow into the system. When the system is other than that, when it doesn't have the slope, it does not work. In a step collection system, the pipe can be here, there, any way you want it, because it's a low pressure system. There, gravity is not involved. Now, I'd just like to demonstrate, if I could briefly, what happens. We recently studied a geotechnical report that shows that we have earthquake conditions in Los Osos as well as the rest of California, but we happen to be at zone 4, which is very critical. And when an earthquake occurs, the sand, if it's wet, consolidates, and then it sinks like this. It may sink an inch and a half or something like that. But you see the pipe is bowed? It no longer has a 1/16 of an inch slope. In fact, what happens is the solids pool there, and the collection systems become unusable. You have to redesign, rebuild the collection system, dig it out, and replace it. It's a big, big mess. This is the risk that you're doing when you consider a gravity system in this element. Thank you. So I just wanted to briefly say that the geotechnical report was done in 2004 for the Los Osos Wastewater Project by Jonathan Blanchard. He's a geotechnical engineer for Frugro here in San Luis Obispo. And he talked to me on the phone, and he said that he thought that the step collection was the preferred system. Now, I think I'm going to warn you, if this system fails because of an earthquake, you will have a free pass from 2701 because the county is not held responsible for the sewers, what I understood. Is that right? Not held responsible? No indemnification? So who's responsible? The homeowners. The homeowners' value will go down. They won't be able to use their system until that's repaired. That's going to be very, very expensive. So I wish you'd take a look at that. Could you show me the next point, which is the wetlands and the forest reuse treatment. That's done in Clayton County, Georgia. Now, this is an example of wetlands that they switched from trees. They used trees from 1980 to 2000, about 20-some years, to use their effluent with. After that, they went to wetlands, and the wetlands was used to treat the water. It worked very well. So please look at Clayton County, Georgia. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barrow. Maria Kelly, followed by Julie Tacker. Ms. Kelly?
Maria Kelly, Los Osos. I'm actually here to say thank you today. I'm also a member of the Technical Advisory Committee on this project, and I want you to know how much I appreciate the staff. They have been so responsive and so willing to respond to questions from the community, questions from the TAC. They meet with us on a regular basis, and I just want to take the opportunity to say thank you, or let you help you give them an opportunity to recognize your staff. I appreciate that Pava Ogren is in Sacramento today on our behalf. I appreciate that Mark Hutchinson is frequently available to questions. The website's been updated to acknowledge comments from within the community, and people do have the ability to access that information. So as much as you may hear that there's specifics, people looking at specifics of this wastewater project, there are other people within the community who are recognizing the broader picture, that this is a water supply issue as much as it's a wastewater issue, and we look forward to the entire solution. But I am here today to say thank you, and thank you to the staff, and for the reliability and the professionalism with which they respond to our questions and concerns. So I don't think that you hear that enough, so thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. Julie Tacker, followed by Lawson Schaller.
Good afternoon. I am Julie Tacker. I am a member of the Los Osos Community Services District. I am speaking on my own behalf this afternoon, and I just wanted to maybe point out some irony. $6 million. In the 90s, $6 million was fronted towards a project for Los Osos by the citizens of this county, and it was forgiven. Los Osos didn't have to pay that back. $6 million was fronted to the Los Osos Community Services District in pursuit and construction of the Tri-W project. We have yet to pay that back. $6 million in fines from the Regional Water Quality Control Board. I'll never pay that back. Today, you're approving the expenditure, albeit inclusive of $5 million that you've approved before. $6 million, again, under the authority of AB 2701. Last October, each home in Los Osos, each property, gave you the authority to spend $25,000, roughly, per home in pursuit of a wastewater project. Today, you continue to spend that money. You're sole sourcing. I don't know this company from another company because you're not going through an RFP process. You're not choosing amongst qualified consultants. You're sole sourcing. You're choosing for us, and you're spending $90,000. You might be able to get this same service from another company for maybe half or two-thirds. We gave you that authority to spend $25,000 per household. I'm here today to ask you not to spend all of it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Tacker. Lawson Schaller, followed by Keith Weimer.
Good afternoon, board and staff. Lawson Schaller, Los Osos. Thank you, John, for the report earlier. I want to talk specifically about the Broderson Leach Field site, more specifically the application rate. Gallons per square foot per day. I am a homeowner below this site. Currently, the science and engineering supporting the application rate at Broderson remains very controversial. We've got to have new independent objective scientific review on that information. I'm requesting that this be done in the EIR process. I have copies here of federal EPA guidelines, AB 85 guidelines. I also have a geotechnical report showing prohibited percolation rates up there at that site, and I'll be handing those in to you. Technical memo, well, the original application rates at Broderson were 30 times these EPA and 885 rates, 30 times those rates. Technical memo by the county on Broderson makes no mention or reference of these EPA guidelines or the 885 guidelines. Frankly, I find that stunning. There's no explanation about it. Now, over time, these application rates have been reduced. They went from 800,000 gallons a day to 400,000 gallons a day. The most recent approach by the county and the TAC is let's take a slow approach. Let's start slow, let's monitor it and ramp it up. Essentially a trial and error process. And for me, that's a bit of a red flag. Asking us to spend the money on a project like that and then a rapid retreat from the original estimates. The cost stays the same. The benefits have been drastically reduced. If we stick to the EPA 885 guidelines, we're looking at perhaps 3% of the original estimated benefit. Very concerning. Is it cost effective? Big question. Secondly, is it safe? An overloaded, concentrated leach field has unquantifiable risk. Liquefaction is a possibility. Effluent daylighting at homes or schools is a possibility. Runoff to the bay flushing existing nitrates is also a possibility. Daylighting, moisture accumulation at homes or Monarch School, which is downhill of this, could create mold. That mold accumulation is an emerging significant health concern. Recharge is important. We need as many alternatives as we can get. I'm supporting the county's efforts. But these recharge sites, they need to be safe first, and they need to be cost-effective. We really have to take a close look at these numbers. We've got to have new independent scientific review of this application rate. I think that's the key term that we need to look at. And I'd also respectfully request that we then have a follow-up of independent peer review on these application rates. There's just too much at stake. The liability that exists there and the cost that exists there need close consideration. Again, I want to support Pablo and his team. I'm looking forward to a world-class project, but please take a look at this. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schaller. Keith Weimer, followed by Gail McPherson.
My name is Keith Weimer from Los Osos. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Honorable Board. I was one of the sustainability group that turned in the EIR recommendations that were endorsed by Surf Riders. And we asked in those recommendations that the project team and your board take a whole systems approach. And that is so that we could come up with multiple solutions. And a whole system approach allows for a lot more complete look at the whole project. Now we hear that the EIR won't consider mitigation beyond the impacts of what are considered to be the wastewater project impacts. And we see Corolla's numbers, which several of us think are not adequate. In other words, 90 acre feet of mitigation will not replace, and Broderson at 500 acre feet per year will not replace the amount of water that's going to be removed from the system by the septic systems. The septic systems are currently putting into the aquifers, or at least into the ground, about 1,150 acre feet per year, and according to Corolla's estimates, that's supposed to be mitigated entirely by a Broderson recharge site, which is only 500 acre feet per year, less than half. So that is very troublesome. I turned in an analysis of the last reuse information the TAC looked at, and I will send that to your board. Sustainability calls for a whole system approach. It also calls for a precautionary approach. In other words, there should be built into the system more than enough recharge, not just enough recharge. So we would expect that the EIR would look at options to Broderson, which is very risky, and that it would look at conservation at a higher level, also look at purple pipe, which is in a very effective system because it doubles up, it both recharges and it conserves. When you conserve, you pump less from the aquifer, so you're doing double duty there. So we do ask and we expect that the EIR will look at the whole system long-term, and then it will evaluate, you know, a system that will completely recharge the aquifer. To cut that short is to produce a document that doesn't give the whole picture and doesn't adequately address the whole system, nor protect our aquifers for the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Weimer. Gail McPherson, followed by Don Bearden.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chairman Patterson and Supervisors. My name is Gail McPherson, and I represent the Citizens for Clean Water. I attended the May 12th, 2008 TAC meeting and submitted written comments as well as oral comments. And I'm following up like Lawson and also another in reinforcing that we really do appreciate staff's hard work, hard effort towards a sustainable solution for Los Osos. My comments today go to the viability of Broderson as part of that tech memo on disposal, and I know you've kind of heard a lot about it, but I'm especially concerned with the lack of a fresh and defensible engineering effort for the current project. For whatever reasons, political or otherwise, the work does not attempt to do a critical review of that Broderson site and look really closely at those application rates and fails to provide verification or correction of elements that the county has determined not to be part of the current project. Instead, the new reports merely repackage data and recommendations derived from reports which have been challenged and are not considered reliable by many industry professionals. Broderson has, as a disposal site, has not been scrutinized or corrected or alternately well justified. Instead, the rates are questionable, as stated before. A clean process requires political drivers are neutralized in favor of fact-based engineering. To state that just because the project was permitted before, therefore it must be okay, not only is foolhardy, but flies in the face of engineering ethics. Broderson is a political hot potato that was purchased with regional board-supplied funds and taxpayer dollars at a grossly inflated rate. It was through a questionable grant secured by an ex-board member who currently is enmeshed in several lawsuits against the CSD, and I understand the county too, that drives Broderson forward. However, the honest and accurate cost-benefit analysis based on true capacity and regulatory requirements for application rates render this site of little value. My concern is not political, it's technical. I know from reports and other records that this site was to provide mitigation for a Tri-W treatment plant, and it was justified only because of that through many challenges based on the benefits of the whole. The balancing has changed and it's no longer justified. The last project relied on justification for close proximity to a treatment site. I'm requesting a cost-benefit analysis based on the cost of the land, pipeline, disposal facilities, pumping costs, added treatment levels, permits and waivers, monitoring and seismic risk, and future abandonment of the site, which has been discussed. Balancing the water supply within the basin based on the three prongs of conservation, recharge, and reuse, Broderson does not physically or technically achieve this goal. This is especially true with the preferred options of an out-of-town facility, the environment and treatment cost advantages of providing effluent nitrogen for agricultural irrigation is obvious. 100% disposal options are available that incorporate reliable, lower-cost storage and in-lieu irrigation. And I just ask that all the information and facts will be available to the third-party review that is planned. And I have provided this report with lots of graphics, which I would love to be able to present at a TAC meeting, but I can't within a three-minute time frame. So if you would please maybe direct a little time so that we could actually sort through this, it would be really appreciated. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. McPherson. Don Bearden, followed by Bruce Payne.
Don Bearden, Los Osos. Honorable Board, I urge you to approve the contract with Public Financial Management. I also urge you to adopt the resolution for financing the Los Osos Wastewater Project. I also urge you to authorize the county to receive and deposit any voluntary assessment prepayments into a Los Osos Wastewater Project Trust Fund. You have heard from some Los Osos citizens who use buzzwords such as sustainable, green, etc., to describe the wastewater project that they would have, that they would propose. This group of people have always been against any wastewater project. They want to keep their old septic tanks or use new septic tanks in a step system. They are doing anything they can to get their project they want.
I think that the county staff should be free to evaluate all types of a wastewater project without the badgering from a small group of contrarians. The county process is flowing smoothly. Let's keep it that way. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bearden. Bruce Payne, followed by Dr. Mary Fullwood.
Yeah, I'm Bruce Payne, resident of Los Osos. I came right straight from work here, and so I'm informal today. But I'd like to compliment you on the size of the print and the size of the advertisement for the so-called wastewater conservation program, which is a joke, but at least it's advertised where people will notice it. It does say it's available, the full thing's available at cost of reproduction, but there's no how many pages or how much it costs. I would like the public to be informed before this meeting's over of how much the full report would cost. Thank you. I come back to my same old saying that any taxpayer or all taxpayers have the right to expect common sense and common decency from anybody who's sucking up to the taxpayer's trough. And this includes looking at recharge, reuse in a wastewater system. When you call this the Los Osos TW, what is it? Wastewater project, anyway, it's WWP. It should have an O in there because everything that's planned at this time is a waste our water project. And that was confirmed by Pavel Ogren at the last meeting. He couldn't say enough times, disposal, disposal, disposal. Disposal is not compatible with sustainability. We have in place, permitted by this county, recharge of the upper aquifer to overflowing every day. We can use that. We can reclaim our water on site way cheaper than what you're talking about. That $25 million per house, everybody needs to know. That's a blank check. The way that ballot was written, you guys have a blank check, and it's disgusting. That 400,000 gallons a day in Broderson is a joke. If you just multiply eight pounds to the gallon out by 400,000, you got 3,200,000 pounds of water. Now, for a little experiment, take a gallon can and fill it with Baywood fine sand and drip water in it till it quits bubbling, and then weigh that and see how much that weighs, and see if you want that kind of weight on a hillside above your house. I guarantee you don't. And it was 800,000 gallons when we recalled the old board, and they wouldn't even listen to it. I want common sense and common decency in this project. We have a right to it. The overriding circumstances that allowed Broderson and that last project to be permitted were thrown out. They do not exist. They've been thrown away. So you have no overriding circumstances.
Thank you, Mr. Payne. Dr. Mary Fullwood, followed by Gwen Taylor.
Hi. My name is Dr. Mary Fullwood, and first speaking as a resident of Los Osos, I just want to say that presenting sustainability considerations is not a process of sabotaging a project, and I'm sure you are all aware of that. Also, I really appreciate Bill Moylan's, Lawson Schaller's, and Gail McPherson's comments. I hope Bill Moylan and Lawson will submit theirs as text for further consideration and review, and I hope you will follow through with Gail's suggestion of doing a presentation at the TAC. Okay, so for going onward, speaking as the Los Osos representative of the San Luis Bay chapter of the Surfrider Foundation, on behalf of SLV Surfrider and the Santa Lucia chapter of the Sierra Club, I want to thank Paavo Ogren, Mark Hutchinson, John Waddell, and Rob Miller for their recent meeting with Jonathan Todd, president of John Todd Ecological Design. On May 23, representatives of the local chapters of Surfrider and the Sierra Club met with County Public Works staff helming the Los Osos Wastewater Treatment Project, engineers with the Wallace Group, Rob Miller, who is also on the TAC, and Cheryl Lenhard, along with the legendary wastewater treatment inventor and designer Jonathan Todd. the Wallace Group hosted the meeting at their SLO headquarters. The wide-ranging discussion included the potential of ponding systems for Los Osos requiring a smaller footprint than the type that failed to gain approval 10 years ago, which would have consumed 60 acres of environmentally sensitive habitat area and likely have never passed the scrutiny of the California Coastal Commission. Also discussed was the use of constructed wetlands for the disposal stream, with the vast majority of the flow going to reuse and not disposal, and alternative energy demonstration projects for biodiesel, such as algae production. Todd expressed interest in collaborating with the county or a design-build team on the project, finding inspiration in the county's approach to the project, as well as the dynamic nature of the community's involvement. The county's Los Osos Wastewater project team is clearly looking to get proposals on all options in conjunction with preparing the environmental impact report and, quote-unquote, let the EIR drive the selection, as Obrin put it. We couldn't agree more, being Surf Rider and Sierra Club. Things are looking good for Los Osos Sewer. Sooner rather than later and better, addressing recycling and treatment than anything that has ever been on the table over the long, long course of the sewer wars. When it's all done, may we all find that some things really are worth waiting for. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Fullwood. My final request to speak is Gwen Taylor.
Good afternoon. My name is Gwen Taylor. I'm a resident of Los Osos. We reside in the Prohibition Zone. On last Thursday night, Pablo Ogren made a presentation. And what I would like to thank Lawson Chawlers and Gail McPherson for is that they once again brought forth the questionable Broderson site. When Mr. Ogren was given sent the questions that he wanted to answer, the question about Broderson came up time and time again. There have been many engineers, some hired by the county. As an example, we have had Metcalf and Eddy, Brown and Caldwell, even Timothy Winneberger, way back in 1957, was talking about the availability and the way in which the water in Los Osos was able to absorb what water there was around. This is back in 57, in heaven's name. Look at the reports. Use these reports that you have available to you. In my hand is a letter that was given to the TAC. I don't know that you, as a board, received this letter. It was written by a man who lives in Los Osos. He is a highly qualified soil scientist. He is world-renowned, and he asks questions. He makes statements. He has volunteered his services in the past years. I'm going to give this to the clerk. I would implore you to read this and take it into consideration. I am not interested in finding water in our garage because of the pressure that is brought to bear from the water that is being injected into Broderson, whether it be injection or whether it be strictly by pipe, laying down as you would find as a pipe that you could put any kind of waste in there or even treated waste. What we need is to have this membership of the TAC giving you as well as the staff information. I don't know if you're getting all of this information, and it really is a very grave concern, as was pointed out by Lawson and Gail. Please listen to what they're talking about regarding the water and the pressure up there in the Broderson site. It's not a funny situation. It's a grave concern, and people who have the power to either say yay or nay must take this into consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. That concludes my request to speak. I'll close it to public comment and bring it back to the board, and ask staff if they have responses to the issues or questions raised specifically by members of the public.
Yes, John Waddell again. I do have some responses. There was Well, first of all, if there was a specific question about the timing of bond sales related to due diligence, and we do anticipate that bond sales would not happen until after the due diligence period. However, the action items before you today are for in preparation for preparing for those anticipated bond sales, contracting with a financial management firm, and also establishing the county's ability to be reimbursed. So they are not action to go forward with bond sales, but they are in preparation for future bond sales. Also, a number of speakers spoke to disposal and reuse, especially at the Broderson site, which is envisioned as a leach field disposal site, which would recharge the upper and lower aquifers. And the just want to say the Broderson site has been a part of project development for many years. Gwen Taylor even spoke of the kind of the history of studies, and it has been extensively studied. The disposal and application rates are well established, and it would continue to be evaluated through the EIR process. But the engineering and the analysis and the extensive on-site testing are well established and well documented. It has been challenged, and it has stood up to challenges in the past.
Okay. And Bruce Payne asked about the cost of the report that was referenced in the notice for the public hearing. I'm not sure exactly what he was speaking to. Are you?
Cost of reproduction. Cost of reproduction.
Yeah, it would just be the cost of reproduction, but I'm not sure what he was referring to. I thought you might have.
I wonder, maybe after the item, Mr. Waddell could get with Mr. Payne and find out exactly what his concerns are there.
Yes, I'd be happy to.
Okay, good enough. Are there any other questions for staff at this point, for members of the board? Seeing none?
With none, I'll sum up, if I might, Mr. Chairman, once again, in public comment, we've heard a number of assertions and the submission of a lot of technical information. I'd point out that this board meeting is probably not the best venue to have those things decided in any way. We appreciate your submission, but I can certainly assure the public that matters of environmental impacts and their related design issues within a variety of projects that are being considered in the environmental review will be thoroughly studied. Once again, a draft EIR is expected September, possibly October right now, and I encourage all who are interested in various specifics that have been brought forward to study the draft EIR. Written comments submitted in the comment period, which will be extended in this case, will be responded to by the project team and will certainly be before this board and any other decision-making bodies that have to deal with this project. I would note that in terms of our public outreach is continuing, and as we get closer to the release of the draft EIR, we will be more active. I'll be sitting down with the project team here shortly to plan outreach efforts starting in late summer and fall. My next office hours, we have canceled the second Tuesday in June as an office hours. I will be out of town that day, as will Mr. Ogren has another commitment. So our next office hours in Los Osos, June 26th, 4 p.m. at the Sea Pines Golf Course. In terms of a variety of staff's recommendations, there was public comment regarding sole sourcing this contract with Public Financial Management. They certainly have a very long track record of good service to the county on a number of very high-profile projects. And thus, I will move staff's recommendations.
Second.
Okay. Point of discussion and clarification. Both Mr. Schaller and Ms. McPherson made reference to information that they had collected on sustainable projects. Is that information best provided to the TAC, or at which opportunity should that be submitted to staff and to the review committee?
They can submit it to our office, and we will and put attention for the TAC, and we will forward it onto the TAC, and that way both the county, the project team, and the EIR team, and the TAC will be assured to get it. So if they want to submit that to the project email address or to our office, put on there for attention to the TAC or the project team, the EIR team, or all of the above, and we'll be sure that gets passed on.
Very good. Thank you. With that, I'll call for a vote. It does require a roll call vote. Madam Clerk.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Linthal.
Aye.
Mr. Ovid.
Aye.
Mr. Asajian.
Aye.
Mr. Patterson.
Aye. Okay. Thank you. I want to remind all of you that it's Election Day, so please exercise your responsibility and your right to vote, and we'll see you next week.
Right.